Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
We're knights of the round table. We dance when we're able. We do routine to call a scene to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot. We eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table. Our shows are more mid-table. So many times we give and rise to our quite something able. We're off the mad in Camelot. We sing from the diaphragm alone.
I have to push the pram a lot.
Well, on second thought, let's not go to Camelot.
Ma'am, sorry.
It is a silly place.
What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How do you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
Oh, didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake. Her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
Oh, but you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
Oh, but if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help, help, I'm being repressed,
bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Hear ye, hear ye. King Shazir the Turbo. All rise for King Shazir the Turbo and the Knights of the Round Table.
It's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a gold grind. The interest is up, and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see, my woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those wooden old boys raised on shotguns. We say grace and we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. We came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. We can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. And we can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Hello, everybody. You're listening to the Knights of the Round Table at www.shazoozradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html, where you have access to not one but four separate chat rooms, including TCT Radio and the old Awake Radio chat room. If you want to go over and join over with People for People Radio, scroll down underneath the chat rooms and click on that little banner ad down there that says People for People Radio. There's some wonderful folks over there. Go over and say hi. Tell them we sent you and all that kind of jazz. Whew, that's a hard catch my breath. Anyway, everything in this world is real if you believe. We got to get into a subject today that might just go all kinds of places. See, this world is strange to say the least. You know, if you believe in Bigfoot, Bigfoot's real. If you believe in aliens, aliens are real. If you believe the earth is flat, round, concave, convex, hollow, whatever, it's real. Everything's real. It's all real. All right, everything that you've ever seen, everything that you ever thought, it's real, man. You can believe it. I saw some 6-inch tall aliens in my mind running around stealing hubcaps to make flying saucers. That must have been real. And if I heard it on the internet, that's proof positive. So, anyway, I posted a link down in there of a deal that somebody put together about space and all that. And, you know, you see a few shenanigans going on. And so, you know, it just poses questions, all right? Regardless of whether you did or didn't believe we went to space or we are in space or whatever, nonetheless, with a skeptical eye looking at the world and seeing and hearing all the different versions of everything that's going on, if you got a open mind, you're going to be open to possibilities. What is possible? What isn't possible? You're going to be open to the knowledge that, you know, there could be a chance that somebody might have lied to you, they might have deceived you, and with modern day technology, you know, had the tools and everything necessary to make something look like it was there, but maybe it wasn't there. You know, some people actually believe that we're living in a virtual reality kind of world. Who knows? But nonetheless, we're going to get into that and a whole bunch more, and this could very well end up being very interesting. So, with that said, in the chat room down there, I first typed, let me see, let me scroll up a bit. Every time somebody types something in while I'm getting ready to read, it just scrolls up the whole chat, and I got to go find what I was looking for. As I typed in the deal for the show today, the first beginning subject, this show could have all kinds of subjects, but I usually type something in that, you know, we're going to start with or whatever. Everything in this world is real if you believe. And then Stephen Gibbons types in there, says, whether you think it is or you think it is not, you're right. Morning, Shaziz, my friend. I hope you are well today. And I type back, I said, truthfully, whether it is or isn't has me baffled. So maybe I am on the fence in no man's land waiting for the facts to come in. Good morning to you as well, my friend. And then further on down the chat room, he types back, he says, well, it's my belief that they have went just not as we are told, or when, but if, I'm a terrible reader, I'm sitting there trying, I got bifocals on, so I'm trying to keep my nose up so I can see what I'm reading. But if they did go, it was with a gravity craft using the craft's electromagnetic field protection from the radiation. They certainly could not have gotten there as well, or as we are told. Sorry about that, folks. Sometimes my brain is like it's running down the road in one direction. It's over there. You know that deal where they always shout squirrel? Like you get distracted and look over there. That's what's going on. Squirrel. Anyway, there's a lot of questions about what happened in 1969 on the way to the moon and all that kind of jazz. Now, maybe they did go, but maybe they didn't present it as it actually occurred. Maybe something different happened. We don't know. Because when I was a child, we were watching it on a TV screen, and it wasn't a very good picture at all. So, you know, it's hard to tell what was real and what wasn't real in that particular instance. And even in modern day, come on, folks, you see blue screen and green screen technology where they present a story to you. And then, like in one episode of the news, they're basically filming two separate reporters supposedly across town from one another, and there was a shooting over this one that this lady was talking about, and there was a shooting over on this side that this lady was talking about, and a bus and a car drives behind the one lady and then drives behind the same bus, same car drives behind the next lady. So it turned out that they in reality were only 30 feet apart in the parking lot. But had you not had a attention to detail, you'd never even known it. You wouldn't have realized what was going on until you just would have believed that there was two separate episodes going on. And that's the thing we find ourselves up against. And if you get out here on the internet, you want to talk about the rabbit hole. This internet, Whereas it could be a very powerful tool used for good purposes, it's pretty used for nefarious and sometimes deceptive purposes. So that's why we're always saying you got to be discerning in all the information that you check out here in this world, because it's so easy to digitally manipulate things out there, and you got to really know what you're looking for in order to distinguish whether it's real or not. But then again, what is reality? Let's look over here at Wikipedia and see what reality is. Reality is the state of things as they actually exist, as opposed to an idealistic, man, I gotta go to reading school, or notional idea of them. Reality includes everything that is, has been, whether or not it is observable or comprehensible. A still broader definition includes that which has existed, exists, or will exist. Philosophers, mathematicians, and other ancient and modern thinkers such as Aristotle, Plato, Frege, Wittgenstein, boy, that's a good name, and Russell have made a distinction between thought corresponding to reality, coherent abstractions, thoughts of things that are imaginable but not real, and that which is way the thought due to the brain. Reality is often contrasted with what is imaginary, illusionary, delusional. There's a scary word. Are we delusional, Barbara?
I'm wondering. I know. I don't even know how to begin. I just been questioning everything.
Yeah, me too. I'm on the fence so far. So it says, in the mind, dreams, what is false, what is fictional, or what is abstract? Okay, that's enough. I'm just going to post this link into the chat room over there, so if anybody wants to do that, go read about reality. Or you could actually just Google it yourself. It's amazing. Google will tell you everything you want to know, man. Fact of that is, I was looking up, I got some of these old slides that they're of Egypt, and I'm looking for one of those little slide viewers so I can look at these slides close. And I actually want to digitize them because of the age of these actual slides, and I want to see what's in there, what was in there back in the day when, you could actually take pictures of things without people telling you you can't take pictures of things because you might see something you're not supposed to or whatever. Anyway, I got this whole bundle of slides. But I want to do that. Dang, I lost my train of thought. Where was I going with that?
Well, we're still on the reality.
Yeah.
What is reality?
So, maybe it's real, maybe it ain't real. In the definition of real, real may refer to reality, the state of things as they exist, rather than as they may appear or may be thought to be. Real numbers in mathematics, extension of the rational numbers and opposed to the imaginary numbers, various uses involving the Spanish word real, meaning royal. What? I never knew that. Anyway, I'll post that link too if you want to read on into that one. But it's really a complex thing.
It's really
I can't even ask if it's reality without saying is it really or
Well, what you're reading in the Google there, Wikipedia. Thing there is, what you're reading, is that even real?
It may not be.
I mean, what they're telling us reality is that even real?
Well, I guess truth is subject to the honesty of the teller these days because, it's
like, we're in trouble.
Yeah.
We're in trouble then.
Well, I was mentioning before we actually got the show started, I was mentioning that there are people, because the mind is so incredibly powerful, There are people in crazy houses, or that's probably a politically incorrect thing to say. What would it be?
Well, the house isn't crazy.
The
so
mental
first.
Institution, or what's the word?
Well, yeah, that's a good point. What is the, those that have been put away.
Yeah,
who appear to be problematic or strange, or their perceptions are unreal.
Yeah, but the things that they're seeing in their mind to them are, very real to them. But what you've been taught and indoctrinated to believe as reality, if you go out and say something like, "Yeah, man, I saw Bigfoot and I'm hearing voices." If you tell that to your doctor, you're going to be on medication, or they're going to bring the guys and gals in with the nifty little white coat and put you in that rubber room so you don't hurt yourself.
Well, it depends on the doctor you go to.
Yeah?
I'm just going to say, because everything, we have to question everything. I'm thinking, I think we are perhaps experiencing two separate realities or two separate episodes, as you said earlier,
Yeah, that may very well be possible. And
how do we know? I mean, this is a concept that some have, that there are parallel experiences or simultaneous parallel worlds and parallel experiences. And is this the real experience, or is that one over there the real experience? But how do you even discern that?
Yeah, no, and May in the TCT chat room said loony bins. That's the politically correct one.
It is?
I don't know.
Oh, boy.
That's what she typed in. Anyway, I probably belong in a loony bin. But like I was saying to Stephen, I don't know.
Here's a strange word, insane asylum. So what is an asylum?
Asylum to me is like, ain't that like a place to be protected or something like
that? That's what I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, see, there you go. Even in the terminology itself, it's hard to be clear in what is real and what isn't real. I mean, when fantasy and fiction merge together, you get what we pretty much see today. I mean, it's pretty wild. Just think about virtual reality technology, to where there'll be come a time when you'll be able to step in a 3D, three-dimensional deal and interact with characters that, may or may not even exist. And here's the crazy thing, like a Twilight Zone version of that, is that you may be the character and they may be in the virtual reality deal.
Yeah, that's pretty scary.
Yeah, but because artificial intelligence is so good, you believe that you're really real, when in reality, you're the character in their fantasy world.
Well, the technology thing is now, they have, and I think it is happening, where people are experiencing those technologies where they put on those things and they're in a virtual reality, and their whole body, their mind, their brain, their mind, their reactions, the whole body is in that experience as though it is real.
Yeah, and as tempting as that may sound to go in there and just to check it out, I ain't never going to put no goggles on like that.
I agree, but there's also this technology now where they're setting it up so that people, they can imprint, or I don't know the right word, but that someone is saying something that they're really not saying.
Yeah, and there's also holographic technology that they've been presenting here recently, that they actually had a satellite hovering above a crowd of people, and the people's like trying to reach out and touch it. It's not really there, it's just projected, and there's no screen to project it on. It's just basically using the air and stuff
atmosphere
around it.
Yeah. Well, you have the Michael Jackson, this was over 2 years ago, where they did a hologram of Michael Jackson on a stage. People paid money for this.
Yeah.
And China put up a whole city in the sky, hologram of a whole city.
Yeah, so, if we were standing out there minding our own affairs one day and suddenly UFOs showed up.
There you go.
With this knowledge in my mind, the first thing I would do is throw a rock at it and see if it bounced back.
Well, I was looking at this. I was looking at one of Bill Cooper's videos,
Yeah.
Bill Cooper went to Area 51, and he spent a lot of time there filming and trying to get close to Area 51 area, you know, place, and excuse me, but they found these strange things flying. Of course, these flying, you know, UFOs, whatever, is very strange. Well, unidentified flying objects, but apparently, here's the thing. Okay, are UFOs real? Now, okay, so the government has the technology. They've had the technology for a long time now, really. But if you look way back in history, before this technology, before any technology that we know of, at least that we were capable of, there were very strange things happening in the sky.
Yeah, there were writings on the wall in different places like Egypt that basically depicted those flying machines.
Exactly. I think it was in some kind of a place in Europe, I'm going to say. There's I saw this link a while back where people, something happened in the sky. There were these strange flying things, cigar-shaped things, and there were explosions in the sky like a war going on. And it was something in the maybe 18th century. This is a factual description that people had this episode. People here on Earth had this episode. And they were talking about it. There were drawings of these things, things that were happening. But yeah, throughout history you have these so-called looking machines, you know, that are high technology or advanced technology in ancient cultures through petroglyphs, you know, and various other things and writings and people's descriptions of things. I Googled, for some reason in Massachusetts, and because I was doing some exploring on UFOs, and there was an episode in Massachusetts, and I said, well, let me check on Massachusetts UFO experiences. Well, this document, way back in the 1800s, of people describing these strange flying things, and of course every one of the descriptions was pretty accurate to what we know today, but yet the authorities' responses were that, well, the people were either drunk or this was swamp gas. I mean, swamp gas was the big cover-up always, was swamp gas.
Yeah,
swamp gas.
Or weather balloons.
Or weather balloons, yeah, like in Roswell, but so the question is, so William Cooper is saying on his videos that he even noted, like we've been saying, supposing there's this false or a red flag attack by aliens, well, the government has that ability.
Yep.
They have that technology with, you know, with the holograms, but they actually have real ships. Okay, now, and they were filming these things and so on. And he was questioning that, and he even noted what I have been saying, that the government is possibly going to create a red flag ET attack.
Well, it wouldn't surprise me, none.
Why would they do that? You know, the question is because, well, I guess people would panic, and I'm always joking, saying, don't get on the ship, because you don't know what that ship is,
yeah.
You know? You don't really know. And where are they going to take you anyway? Where will they take you? If things are so, you know, bad, or let's say really, really difficult here or whatever, or things have gotten to that point, well, da-da-da-da, here comes the saviors, you know?
Yeah. May in the chat room first typed in loony bins, but now she's got granny in the closet.
Well, that's certainly politically correct.
Yeah. You ever seen that, I think it's Dr. Seuss or something like that, Horton Hears a Who?
Yeah.
Yeah, go watch that show, folks, Horton Hears a Who. It's really interesting. So, basically a little dust particle flying around, and there's a little world on there with who's in Whosville or whatever, and, you know, Horton, the big elephant, he hears it because he's got them big old ears. So, I don't know, maybe if you keep your ears open, you might hear a who, too. And so, you know, all the dust flying around your house, don't be slapping it around or sucking it up with a vacuum, because you might be getting Whosville in the process, you know. See, to the Whos, that might be a black hole, you know. You're getting sucked into a vacuum, and that's a black hole, you know, to us, right? I know they's probably going to come and lock me up after this show, man.
Well, you know, then I'm going with you.
Yeah.
Okay, so, you know, this whole thing about reality, perception is reality, okay?
Yeah.
And it, this covers basically what a person believes is real to them. So what I, my experiences, or what I've come to believe, you know, is real to me. It's going to be real to you or not, your perception, all right? It's, the reality is different for different people, you know?
Yeah.
But it follows all kinds of things, political, religious beliefs, relationships, you know, and everything is, this is the whole thing about reality.
You found a really good article about what is real, didn't you?
Yeah, I put a, posted it up. I'm looking at it right now. What are the really real things, okay? The things that all or most people agree are real. There's a question there, but are they? So I call these things universal truths, this writer saying universal truths. Though that is probably not the correct term, because how can you know it's truth, right? But if the whole, let's say all the majority of people believe in something, it, you know, so he's referring to that as a universal truth. But the question is, it's, is it a universal truth just because a majority of people believe in it, and is it real? It, you know, does it take a certain number of people to agree on something for it to be classified as real?
Well, me personally, I'm more skeptical when more people believe it than less people believe it, because of that, like, 100 monkey syndrome kind of thing, you know? I'm gonna question everything, regardless. Like I guess that makes, because I'm outside the box, and because I've witnessed enough in my life, it tells me that they have the capability of manipulating mind. You know, when you talk about mind control and propaganda, you can get a whole entire group of people to believe that somebody did something that they didn't do. And so now the people that, you know, obviously you're tugging on somebody's heartstring or their anger or whatever, you can get basically a lynch mob running after these people because they believe this person really did something. And, you know, in a world where you're supposedly innocent until proven guilty, that's counterproductive, wouldn't you think?
Oh, absolutely, you know. But I'm looking at this piece about quantum theory. We just touched on that a little bit before we got on air. And now, the quantum theory, of course, is scientific, right? So the scientists have a position where they tend to prove to us what is real or not, right? Doesn't mean that it is real. It's just their theory. So quantum theory suggests that nothing exists without an observer, and that the observer also has an influence over what they're observing.
Yeah.
Now, that to me is very intriguing, because I kind of tend toward that might be the possibility, because I feel like, you know, we talk about we create our own reality, right?
Yeah.
I mean, what we believe, that's it. I believe that. So I'm creating this reality in my world that this particular subject or system is real, because I, you know, I believe it. So I'm the observer. What happens, though, when we are actually in the process of observing, right? That's a good way to go. So what is going on with us as a human being that is observing something?
Well,
who could say, like, what's the mechanisms of that? What is going on?
Well, I don't know, but it opens that conundrum about, like, if a tree in the forest falls and no one's around to hear it, does it make a sound? I mean, like, how would you know? I mean, physics says, yeah, it'd be crashing and booming and somebody would hear it somewhere. But, you know, if
well, but then I thought that this was, if a tree falls in the forest, it has a a universal effect, but nobody may hear it. But it's happening.
Yeah. So, you know,
if you're not observing it, does it mean that it's, that it really isn't happening?
I don't know, but scientific method says, you know, you observe, you test, and all that kind of stuff, and then you can come to a consensus. Basically, I think that's what Stephen just said in the chat room. He said what we have is more of a consensus, a mutual agreement, than an ultimate truth. So We don't actually know it's true, but most of the people believe it is, so therefore it's fact, that kind of deal. Does that make sense?
Well, I don't know what makes sense anymore.
Yeah, that's all.
So here's another piece. So do we really know what's real? But there is an optimistic answer, and the answer is maybe.
Maybe.
So that's as far as the optimism goes.
Well, maybe. There you go, man. And so this is why I get all up on my ear when people, you know, whether it be from a religious standpoint of view or a scientific standpoint of view, when they talk about creation or Big Bang. You know, the Big Bang is it all come from this tiny little spot, and somehow or another it exploded and it produced all the universe, and creation was that it was spoken into existence, you know, let there be light, and suddenly there's light and all that kind of stuff. Well, since none of us were actually there when the actual thing occurred, unless you want to go into the scientific version of energy, so energy can neither be created nor destroyed, so that means that everything that is here now was there then, it was just in a form of a different energy. So we've always existed throughout the entirety of all time, space, and history, or whatever. We just existed in a different form. Now here we are in these shells we call our bodies, and we're running around in a world that could either be a virtual world or could be in fact a real world. But now that it's called into question whether or not we can prove or disprove or believe it or don't believe it, now here you are in the twilight zone, that do-do-do-do-do.
Well, listen to this now. So I'm reading from this other post, do we really know what's real? And the most optimistic answer is maybe, and I don't know if that's such an optimism, but anyway, so here's what this person writes. And this is interesting because it's the rise of rationality over superstition, okay? This is considered the greatest achievement of the past three or four centuries, that we've become rational and we've put aside superstition, right?
Yeah.
So here it is, but this person says it's startling news that physics has arrived at a reality crisis.
Yeah.
Physics.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, what we're discussing, what you and I are choosing to discuss today, basically has been discussed since ancient Greek philosophers have been on this subject. What is the universe made of? Where did the universe come from? And how do we know what's real?
That's right. And so, just as religion is maybe classified to some as, you know, some sort of, what was that word you used earlier? Oh, doggone it. What was that word you just used?
What?
About, you know, superstition. That's it.
Yeah.
So religion could be called superstition, but then again, if you weigh out the facts of both sides of the story, whether it be science or superstition, then they both pretty much are in the same ballpark because, you know, a theory and a belief, they're not too far apart. You know, I theorize that this is how something is working, or I believe that this is how something is working. So I think that that would be what people like Aristotle and Plato and all them would have been talking about back then. What do you think?
Well, I think that we're not going to get very far, because if we're still asking the same questions that the Greeks were asking, I don't know.
Well, you got a point there. Man, we're on our quest for truth. We've gotten nowhere. We found nothing. We have
exactly.
Got some advancements in ways to basically create our own truth. I mean, like, I could do a 3D CGI of anything and present it as truth and tell everybody's truth. And, you know, seeing is believing is what they say. And so if you see me standing next to Bigfoot and we're having drinks with some aliens, and it looks real, and maybe it is real. Maybe I'm an alien. Maybe I got me a UFO packed in the backyard over there, and I might just, you know, fly around and, you know, watch the videos later when y'all see a UFO, and you say, yeah, look, they do exist, you know? But it's me standing at home going, ha, 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 I fooled them turkeys. Now what if the government was doing the same job just to propagandize you or manipulate you into believing something? Is that possible?
I think so. You know, looking at the superstitions piece, you know, I mean, because the people originally had only their superstitions, right? I mean, they weren't scientists, right? There was no scientific studies or capabilities to really weigh, measure, whatever they do when they're the scientists to prove something is real. You know, for instance, this is a wonderful informative, well, there's a video out now, but it's called The Secret Life of Trees, all right? Because now this is, somebody could say, well, okay, trees have a, trees actually feel, okay? They are sensitive enough to feel some form of emotion. I mean, we say emotion is like sadness, anger, love, you know, whatever, all that. But the theory, well, theory, or let's say the suspicion or you know, that type of thing, where people in the ancient times came to realize that trees actually, and plants and all of life actually has a sensitivity, an awareness, an alertness, okay? Although you could say go to the depth of even consciousness, okay? Conscious awareness. Now, of course, people would say, well, that's just a superstition. That's ridiculous, okay? And they did that, done that for a long while. You know, where people had this sensory perception, which is important to talk about sensory perceptions, which we all have the capability of. But superstitions arise, well, who, I guess you could say, who claims that it's a superstition as compared to real? Right? Those that may not have had an experience.
Yeah.
Right? So I've had experiences where with nature, and I know you have too,
yeah,
that are pretty profound and that tell us something very different than what we've been told by the authorities. And I'll call all the authorities, you know, they're the scientists or they're the bosses of everything or they're the, you know, the most experienced or they're the most, you know, intelligent, or that's what they say they are anyway. So my experience with nature has been pretty profound throughout my whole life, as have you.
Yeah.
And I know Patty too, and even Two Dog, and probably others who are listening. But in the ancient times, you know, people were open to these experiences, okay? There was no authority in the way that we have today, that the only way you can prove that a tree has an emotional consciousness is through scientific experiment. Otherwise, it's just, you know, crazy. It's impossible. So now you have, like I'm saying, like in the ancient cultures, like in our tradition, the people, the ancient people, the Indian people knew that life had an awareness, creation, nature had an awareness, and that there was a communication of some form, if you were aware. And most times, most people, let's say most early people in those days, were very connected and very aware. They were more so because their minds weren't, you know, overwhelmed or let's say
flooded with Wi-Fi,
programmed. Yeah, exactly. Or their, let's say their natural instincts were not numbed and dumbed down.
Yep.
So these kinds of experiences that people had in the ancient times, you know, were known as real, okay, because they had that ability to do this. They weren't skeptics in such a way as people are today, because we've been programmed to believe in certain things, and we've also been programmed that there are authorities or those that are above you that have the ability to prove this a theory as true or not. And because they don't have those, let's say the innate connectedness to things, and I'm speaking particularly about nature, but now you have this secret life of plants that came through low caste, and he was a low caste in India. But he was a scientist, but his color, of course, made him a low caste. And when he did these experiments, he started to discover that, in fact, plants did react emotionally. or what we would call emotional, all right, because we don't know what the plant is really saying, but it's displaying a reaction. So, for instance, a reaction to somebody going, you have a potted plant, and let's say, just in this experiment, because this is what people did in this experiment, they took a match, they lit a match, and they started moving toward the plant because they were going to burn the leaf. But that leaf, but that plant was hooked up to all kinds of, you know, equipment so that it would show on a gauge how that plant reacted, okay? And they come to find out that when that person lit the match and started moving toward the leaf to burn, and their intention was to burn the leaf, to see if there was any reaction, that the gauge or the meter would go berserk. Okay? And so they did these experiments. This man did these experiences over and over and over again with all sorts of ways, and he basically proved that these plants reacted to thought and action of a human being, because the experiments went so far as to just think that you were going to burn that plant leaf. Wow. Just thinking. This is amazing, right? So he kept, he made his experiments over many years because, you know, as a scientist, you know, you have to do these experiments in order to prove it. You have to do all kinds of things over and over and over and over again and get the same result, and that will show that this is fact. So every time he brought his work, his scientific experiments, to the authorities, which happened to be the British, you know, uppy-ups, because after all, they were annexed. You know, they belong to Great Britain now.
Yeah.
So he had to bring his experiments to these people. Well, and it says in the book about this man, the basically those other scientists of the higher authorities than a low-caste Indian threw his experiments in the trash.
Wow.
So, huh. But in this little town in India, they have a museum now. You can actually go there and you can see his whole lab and all the experiments that he did and all how he did it and all the writings that he came up with and proved, basically, that plants do react. They do have a sensory reaction to harm that would come to them. And then the opposite, goodness, caring, let's say like watering, or, you know, watering the plant, feeding the plant, talking to the plant, telling the plant, you know, thank you so much, you're so beautiful.
I do that.
I love you.
Huh. I do
so,
that.
So, what?
I do that.
Exactly. So now you have this book came out. A very old book. I actually found this book in an old bookstore. I was walking by. I got this strange message. Somehow I think I saw something about the scientist, Secret Life of Plants, and I said, gee, I'd like to read that book, right? So here's the way the universe works. I said to the universe, but I was saying it by saying, I'd like to read that book. I'd like to find that book. My words went out into the universe. Like a couple days later, I was walking down the street here in the village, and I looked at the window in this bookstore where they have old books. Right in the window, along with other books, was The Secret Life of Plants book.
Wow.
Right. So, now there's a video. You can actually find the video, The Secret Life of Plants, which goes into this man in India, his first discoveries, and then how these discoveries and studies actually took off in Germany. They were doing the same thing, and other scientists, to basically prove, Shaziz, this supposed superstitious theory about plants having an emotion or a reaction. So this is very real, all right? Now, but if you haven't seen these studies,
you
right?
You never know.
You would not know, and you would say that's ridiculous. That's impossible. Now, or if you haven't had an experience like I have with nature, with its responding, and various other things that I have seen. That's my personal experience. I cannot prove it to you. You might think I'm a quack if I share the things with you that I have experienced, just like you you know, with Goliath, right? Yep.
Well, I'm going to post a link in the Skype here for you. Go over and take a peek real quick of what Wikipedia says about superstition.
Okay.
It'll blow your mind.
Oh, another thing that's going to blow my mind. Our favorite, that's our favorite word.
Yeah.
Well, can I get it? Let me see. So.
I'll let you read it this time because I'm a... stuttering on my words. I sound...
Okay, so superstition. Wikipedia. Let's see. You know, superstition. Yeah, oh boy, it's taken a while. Give it to me. Come on, let me get rid of that. Okay, here we go. Superstition is a pejorative term for any belief or practice that is considered irrational. Who's considering it irrational? There's the question, right? Here we go. So now, if I'm a person who doesn't do much research or doesn't question everything, I would read this and I would say, yeah, it's irrational.
Yeah,
okay, because they said
everybody
so.
Everybody's superstitious with this.
So it arises from ignorance. Oops. Oh, dear. That means I'm an ignorant person. A misunderstanding of science. There you go.
Yep,
because science is king. Those scientists, they're the ones who have all the answers, and we must abide by what they tell us.
That's right.
Or otherwise, we're known as ignorant. Well, they push that a lot, don't they? So, a causality, a positive belief in fate or magic, or fear of that which is unknown. See, there's another conundrum, unknown. All right?
Yep.
A fear of that which is unknown. So, again, the scientists, everything that is unknown to a scientist is superstitious. Okay? Superstition also refers to religious beliefs or actions arising from irrationality. Ah.
Well,
so
see,
the words...
The science could be superstitious, too, because you can't see gravity, but they say it exists, so...
There you go.
Yeah.
Exactly. How do we know what is real? You begin... That's our question. So the word superstition is often used to refer to a religion not practiced by the majority of a given society, regardless of whether the prevailing religion contains alleged superstitions. Yeah, so our religion, because there's more people involved in it, even though some of it, you know, has alleged superstitions within it, we're still okay. We're not insane. It is also commonly applied to beliefs and practices surrounding luck, prophecy, and certain spiritual beings, particularly the belief that future events can be foretold by specific, apparently unrelated prior events. So you are really a wackadoodle if you receive a prophecy of some future event.
That's right.
Okay. Because you can't weigh measure that. Scientists can't, you know, they can't evaluate it. So due to the pejorative implications of the term, items referred to in common parlance as superstition are commonly referred to as a folk belief or folkloric. So the word superstition is first used in English in the 15th century, modeled after an earlier French superstition. The earliest known use as English, okay, occurs in Friar Dawes' Reply, circa 1420, where the four general sinners are enumerated as seditions, superstitions, be gluttons, or be proud, the French word. Together with its romance cognates, this is getting deep here, contains Latin superstitio. Superstitio.
Just what you've read so far puts us all in the nut house.
But listen,
okay.
this is interesting. Well, I think, is that real? Are we in the nut house?
We may be.
While the formation of the Latin word is clear, is it? it's from the verb superstare. Superstare, to stand over, stand upon, survive. Its original intended sense is less clear. It can be interpreted as standing over a thing in amazement or awe. Well, that's superstitio. That's the Latin word. Superstitio is superstare. It's the verb. Now, let's look at this. Standing over a thing in amazement or awe, but other possibilities have also been suggested, meaning the sense of excess, over-scrupulousness, or over-ceremoniousness in the performing of a religious rites, or else the survival of old, irrational religious habits. So here's the thing. When you are... My personal experience, I have to share it because this is just my personal experience. Again, it may be real to you or not. That's not the point. It's my experience. But what they're talking about here, the verb superstare, I'm going to read it again. To stand over, stand upon, survive. Its original intended sense, it can be interpreted as standing over something in amazement or awe. Okay. So, listen, awe and amazement. I experienced awe and amazement in nature's response to me with what we call a vision quest or ambalachia in Lakota, meaning I spent 4 days and four nights in the mountains praying with no food and no water, and something amazing happened, and I was in awe.
Yep.
Now, super stare, this is interesting because the only way, well, I'm going to say the only way, it may not be the only way, but my experience says, the only way to see, and I call it seeing without looking, because when we're looking, ordinarily our mind is involved and our mind is telling us, oh, that's a tree. It's only a tree. Has green leaves and brown bark or whatever. That's what the mind says. So, but when you want to see without looking, what do you want to see? You want to see beyond what we've been told is in front of us. Exactly, right? So that's the mystery. So super stare, I'm going to take that word because what it is really you have to stare. Hold your focus completely for a period of time on one subject in nature. Don't move your eyes around and don't be, you know, looking here, looking there. But it's a super stare. It's a good word because when you do that and you hold the monkey mind aside, in other words, the monkey mind that will say, ah, that's just a tree. The tree is brown. The leaves are green. When you hold the monkey mind, or let's say the programmed information that we've received about a tree, okay, when you hold that at bay and you come into your center or your super stare, something starts to shift. Something extraordinary starts to happen. There's a vibration in nature. Well, we could say it's energy or frequency. We talk about aura. Everything has an aura. Human beings have an aura. Nature, trees, everything has an aura. It's an energy field, right, Shaziz?
Yeah.
You cannot weigh it. You cannot balance it. You can't plug something into it. It's there. It's real. But you can't prove it. But you can see it if you use this, well, what they're saying, super stare. So, but they're talking about this as a bunch of nuts.
Well, you want to hear a bunch of nuts, I'm going to get locked up. My wife is going to have me committed. Because on the internet, of course, but on the same page that you're reading from about the Wikipedia deal on superstition, I just found out something, and let me see if I can get back there to it. Doggone it, where's it at? There it is. All right, well, okay, let me scroll back up. Where'd it go? Dad, burn it, I lost the page. Okay, let me do this. Go back. There it is. Okay. Apparently, there's a superstition out there. I guess it came from Utah. It says, the superstitious practice of placing a rusty nail into a lemon is believed to ward off the evil eye and the evil in general, as detailed in the folklore text Popular Beliefs and Superstition from Utah. So, I'm going to get me a rusty nail and a lemon, and when my wife gives me the evil eye, I'm going to put that nail in there and show it to her and say, look, there, I'm good. She said, no, you're going to the nut house. What do you think? Rusty nail and a lemon. That gets evil eye off of you. What do you think? You think you can take that to court with you and get out of something because the judge gives you the evil eye and you show her a rusty nail stuck through a lemon?
I think you, both you and your wife will wind up taken. If she goes there and claims, I don't know.
Yeah. And also but, said down there, some cultures consider black cats to signify good luck or bad luck. I guess it depends on the mood of that cat. What do you think?
Say that again?
It said some cultures consider black cats to signify good luck or bad luck. And my view on that would be it would be considering what mood that cat's in. Because if the cat's lovable, that would be kind of like good luck. You could pet the cat. But if that cat was in a bad mood and you reached your hand out there, you're getting tore up. That would be bad
luck. Well, listen now. All right, I'm going to take that because... Okay, where did this superstition, or where did this, let's say that this was put out as a reality or as a truth,
yeah,
a long time ago by by popes or a pope or some form in that manner, because black cats became evil or connected to the devil, just like goats. And because that related to old women who had cats or goats who were witches. You know, so just because an old woman, you know, lived by herself in the woods and she was an herbalist and she went out there and she was talking to her goats or her kitties like we often do, that, you know, kind of led to this whole system of, attacking or taking women because they were witches. And then you have the Wiccan... the Wiccan religion, actually, which is an earth-related or nature-related religion, which shifted into the witches. Okay, so there you go down that, you know. But what about walking under ladders? Okay, black cats or walking under ladders. Don't step on the cracks.
You're
in the sidewalk.
Yeah. Huh? Yeah, breaking mirrors gives you 7 years of bad luck.
So where did that come from?
Don't know.
Was there long ago somebody by accident broke a mirror and bad things happened to them that had nothing to do with the mirror?
Yeah.
And so, right, I'm just saying, or if somebody walked under a ladder by mistake and turned the corner and, you know, whatever, fell off a cliff, so...
Maybe somebody walked under a ladder and somebody accidentally dropped their paint bucket on that person.
There you go. So, well, that would be good advice. Don't walk under a ladder, because who knows what that painter's up there doing. Is he paying attention? He might knock his bucket of paint off.
Just paint my wife's hair, she's going to get riled up because my wife don't play when it comes to her hair. Well, I'll tell you that.
Well, you have the cognitive perspective, okay? Cognitive perspective.
Yep.
But here's a little thing from this Wikipedia thing. So from a simpler perspective, natural selection will tend to reinforce a tendency to generate weak associations. In other words, rule of thumb. That are overgeneralized. So if there is a strong survival advantage to making correct associations, then this will outweigh the negatives of making many incorrect superstitious associations. It has also been argued that there may be connections between OCD and superstition, and this may be connected to hygiene.
So I'm kind of confused. If you stink, does that change anything?
Well, we can get into real confusing perceptions here, and what is real and what is not. Who's writing this? There's a, you know, superstition and politics. There's opposition to superstition. You know, was first recorded in ancient Greece. All right. So, well, what we're talking about here goes back so far because, you know what? Nobody has the answer.
No, they don't. You know, and I put that copy of a picture of that lemon with a rusty nail in there just in case you give me the evil eye. It's in the Skype chat right now, so that wards off any evil eye. Man.
Well, you know, the question remains, how can we believe in popular theories? Because they're theories like super strings or the multiverse. when there's no way to verify them, right?
Well, that's the point. And with science and what they call religion and all that, or spiritual beliefs, you know, look, I can't prove or disprove God. Do I believe in God? Yeah, I believe in God. I believe there's a creator and a higher power, and I believe there's more to this earth than meets the eye. You know, some of the things on the earth, you can witness yourself. You know, you basically, you treat nature right, nature treats you right back. If you abuse nature, you know, eventually you're standing in, you know, like the city dump. Like, if I throw all my garbage in my yard, then I'm basically living in the city dump. So those are things that, you know, we can, from whatever our perception of our reality right there, some people might like living in a pile of trash, but not me. You see what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's sort of like, so let's look at this piece here. When the so-called God particle, the Higgs boson, was discovered, it supposedly explained how particles of matter acquired mass. But how do we know this is true? How do we know what is fundamental in quantum field theory? 19th century philosopher Ernst Mach held the view that inertial mass of nearby objects is created by the entire distribution of matter in the universe. So we have these advanced concepts like supergravity and superstring theory would posit the existence of 11 dimensions or more. What does that really signify except numbers on a blackboard? You know, we just keep going round in circles here.
Yeah. You know, this this subject's pretty wild. Folks, if you're just tuning in right now, we're saying everything in this world is real if you believe. All right? And a question mark. So we're kind of actually questioning reality itself. You know, all these different things out there that you see on the internet, that big old giant rabbit hole, the virtual world, so to speak. Do you realize how huge cyberspace is? There's so much information out there, it's mind-blowing. There's that word again. It'll blow your mind.
Yeah, I mean, is our universe real? I mean, we could go, am I real? Are you real?
Well, it may very well be a case of Horton Hears the Who, man. You know, I even thought about this one time. You know, there's folks out there that believe that there's a dome over the earth. What if we were merely in the eye of the Creator? We were like right there in the eyeball, and that dome over was actually, what's that thing that covers your eyeball? The outer portion of your eye. Anyway. So we're inside the eyeball, and we're just not thoughts in the Creator's mind. So we don't even really technically exist physically. We're just in the mind of the Creator, or maybe, you know, some person that, you know, may or may not have ever existed. We're in a sort of, we're like memories of the past. Does that make any sense? I'm just adding to the layers of confusion is what I'm doing.
Well, because we create a form of collective reality, this is what we're doing. We members, all of us of society, are creating a form of collective reality.
Yep.
Right? We're part of a community of minds, for instance, right? You know, we could talk about money. Money, in reality, consists of pieces of paper, right? Yet they represent something much more valuable. They have the power of life and death, this paper, right? But they wouldn't be worth anything if people didn't believe in this power. So you could say money is fiction,
yeah.
But it's useful. But it's a useful fiction, okay? That's our choice.
Well,
we all agree that money is useful, but it's a fiction.
I just want, when people listen into this show and open their mind, I just want people to not close their mind off to any possibility that's going on, and to try, even as hard as it may sound, to be able to be discerning in what you're witnessing so that you're not deceived. I mean, it's so easy in this world to be deceived, it's crazy. Now, we're told that the world is in a mess. And so there's those of us out there that believe that it could actually be fixed if we, you know, used our free will and chose to do it. I mean, from what I perceive is we have every single resource necessary, all the information and technology to actually make it better. And even if you want to go into the realms of magic or even perception or creating your own reality, if I'm living in this world and my perception is that we could actually fix all this stuff, then to me, that's real. That's the truth. We can do it if we really choose to do it. But your perception might be something completely opposite, such as there are people out there that say that, you know, it's written in stone. There's no, you can't fix it. There's only one way to get it fixed. And there are people out there that say that it's impossible because of the nature of man. Well, the nature of man is you got two choices. You could either do something right or you could do something wrong. Regardless of whether you think there is a right or wrong, you know, you still have a choice whether to even believe or not believe in that. So it all does come down to our own personal spiritual journey, our own personal choice, what we choose to be our reality or what we choose to believe in. And so this subject right here, if you ever want to talk about going down a rabbit hole, What if hypothetically we were, you know, like I said earlier, if you was in the video game and you thought you were in the video game, but in reality you were the character that somebody else who was real was in the video game and they were playing you, if you understand what I mean. Does that make your mind hurt?
I'm just trying to find a direction here. Well, something that will
the direction that we need to figure out how to go in is how to find a way for us to ground ourselves to you know, something, you know, because otherwise everything that we've talked about becomes all chaotic. There's the world makes absolutely no sense. There's nothing real. Nothing. If you think it's real, if you think it's not real, then it's not real, and so on. And so that makes the whole world. You imagine how many people's on this planet, and they're all thinking different realities at the same doggone time. And we wonder why this group over here, they're fighting. These ones over here are saying peace and love, and can't we all just get along? And nobody can take that conscious mind and focus it into a energy to make everybody's experience here wonderful as opposed to what we see. What do you think of that?
Well, yeah, I think that... Well, we're talking about, and again, everything we say we have to question, and we're in that question, we have to question everything. So even if I say we are connected to, through a collective consciousness, all right, now I believe that, but is that real? how do we prove that? There you go.
I don't know, but this energy that I get, I feel that what you're saying is true, all right? I can actually,
well, that's where I was going.
Yeah, I can actually feel that it's true. You know, when I see certain things and I can feel it and I can discern, you know, if something feels wrong about it, then that's when the questions comes about.
Well, that's your discernment. See, that's what I use. I say that's the discernment tool we have, and it's about sensory experience. It's not thinking. Because our monkey mind, or what we've been trained, what is imprinted or implanted or programmed into our brain, okay, is all this mix-up and confusion and the systematic, you know, positioning of ourselves on this in this world as thinking, believing, behaving, and acting according to those that are the authorities. That's how I feel. But so when I sense something, my sensory perception, okay, that's a discernment through sensory experience. So either it feels right, feels positive, or feels a certain frequency. Because we have to use the word energy frequency here, because when something is, let's say when something is true or real, okay, we experience something. Just like when we feel the love of someone, when someone is loving us or expresses love energetically or verbally, we experience that through a feeling, a sensory experience, right? That it's a different frequency. So that's how I gauge a truth,
yeah,
through a different frequency. And this is about everything. Everything now we know the frequency of a tree will react, either, you know, like go off the gauge of we could use the word terror, or concern, different gauging there, different levels of that meter. Just so we know, as we know that everything in creation has an awareness or a conscious awareness, or we could say that, right? So this is about frequency or energies. So the discernment here piece is really important, because our whole lives, our whole world depends on our discerning tool.
Yeah.
Right? You would say. To figure out how to live in this world. Who to be in relationship with, how to vote, I suppose you could say, although I don't really believe that makes a difference anymore, but I'm just saying everything, what kind of food to buy, what apple to pick, and I'll give you this information here. I was looking at this woman years ago. She was in the vegetable and fruit department, and she had a pendulum. Now, she's holding this pendulum over the fruit, right?
Yeah.
Because you know what a pendulum does, right? A pendulum reacts energetically to what you want it to. So if you're asking the energy of that fruit to tell you, are you a healthy, good piece of fruit? Are you going to be delicious and sweet? Okay, that's your intention. The intention is an energy. It has a power. The intention then is relegated to the pendulum, or the frequency of the apple and the pendulum start relating energetically, because that's what happens. You probably can more talk about this scientifically than I can. Well, that pendulum, so she's experimenting or looking for the right piece of fruit. Now, I don't use a pendulum. I use my hands with the same intention. There's a vibration that is set up, but I have to have an intention first. And I have to be clear with my intention. That has a different frequency. It's a clear, or clarity, you could say. Well, the intention is clear. It's purposeful.
Yeah.
It's very clear, without a doubt. I know what I want. I'm looking for that best apple, right, or that peach that's sweet. And that intention sets up an energy in my hands that connects with the energy of the fruit. And there's a communication there, some kind of a conversation. It's unseen. But it's energetic.
Yeah. Now, speaking of intentions, you know, we always talk about they and the elite and you know, the people out there, the controllers or whatever, you know, living in the same reality that we are, you know, whatever that is at this point in the game, they want to be able to control people's intentions or their thoughts or their ideas or whatever like that, in order to keep the reality of the, basically they're the power structure and we're the
their reality.
So, yeah. So these folks somehow or another was able to manipulate the game to get up to a higher level to basically have all the money, which what we said earlier was fictional anyway, so it's not even real money. But we fight each other over this real money, and we need this real money to get shiny things for our deal. It almost sounds like a version of, have you ever seen that video game Sims?
No.
Do you know that video game, that you can actually buy property with real money? You can buy property, you can buy clothes and cars, and you can have a bank account, and it's like living vicariously through a virtual reality character. If you ever get a chance to go check it out sometime, there's actually a market out there where you can buy things and sell things with real money, and it goes.
And you don't have any money?
No, you actually. Well, you have the system's money, the dollar or the whatever,
okay,
whatever your version of money is. So,
wow,
there's a real financial economy based in a virtual reality video game. So if I got my video character, I create my character, I can buy things for my character, like shoes and clothes and cars and, you know, objects to put
in. Oh,
for
your character.
Yeah.
What a waste of time.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. So,
oh my gosh. Well, there's a virtual people live vicariously through this virtual reality.
Yeah.
They can't get out and have a real life. Well, you know, when we say get a life, right? That's what we mean. people are subject to these things on purpose because they're living in this virtual world that isn't real. Either they're a couch potato, whatever that, you know, means. They can't get up and they can't live a life because they're stuck. Like, I saw this really amazing cartoon last night. It was like one of the best, most powerful cartoons I've seen recently. And it was about this little child. This was a cartoon. A little child, and the world where everyone has their face stuck in an iPhone. Nobody was relating to this boy, right, this child. So the whole cartoon is about the enormity of people's, well, you could call it the zombie apocalypse, because they are zombies, right? So, but they're people, they're mothers, fathers, men, women, and others, are all with their faces in these iPhones. The whole cartoon is about the experience of this little boy, who's trying to get the attention of people. He's jumping up and down, he's pulling on their pants legs, and all that they're doing is looking, they got their face in the iPhone. It was really extraordinary. And then you have the whole visual here of thousands and thousands of people in this field of this cartoon with their faces in the iPhones and they're falling off cliffs or whatever. And this is reality here, folks. This is where we're heading. This is the age of this zombie apocalypse. I feel that's what it is, where people are so hooked in, literally, their minds are so hooked in to this technology that they can't look up at a child who's just begging for some attention, you know, where they don't see anything around them, where they're all walking around locked into this technology. I call it the intern net, because intern, when you intern someone, you put them in a coffin and put them in a vault, you know, behind, that's it, they're dead. And the net, of course, is something that we capture things in. We capture things in a net. So internet is what's happening. People are being interned, but they're walking around like zombies. And this cartoon was just pretty extraordinary because it really shows the state of things and how they're setting this whole thing up, where people are living vicariously through the internet, through video games, through that, you know, false reality. And this is the serious thing, you know, that people aren't living in any experience of a real. There's no real experiences for people. Everything is technology.
Yeah. It's a really interesting concept when you think about it. I just Googled up eBay, and you can buy a Sims men's snowboard winter coat, ski, snow, black, size large, for $24.99.
Yeah.
Ah!
Well, you know, people scoff at the fact that that they are brainwashed, right?
Yeah.
We're telling people, you know, listen, there's a brainwashing going on. It's systematic, and it's been incrementally being indoctrinated into our lives, systematically, step by step, incrementally, meaning you're not aware of it, because you don't see it. You just accept it. It's not a huge bomb that lands on you, right? It's just little tiny things. So you don't really know what's happening to you, you know, but people are brainwashed. It's a systematic brainwashing going on incrementally in our lives that has been happening over centuries. And so I always say to people, if you don't think you're brainwashed, you know, put that iPhone or whatever it is that you do every day that you can't do without, put it down. See how it feels. What does it feel like? How long can you stay away from it? If you cannot stay away from it, if you start to feel agitated, it's just like an alcoholic, right?
Yeah.
Or somebody who uses drugs, because this is the drugging of the minds of the population. So it's just like that. It's an addiction. They have us addicted. Deeply, powerfully addicted.
Oh, yeah.
And if you can't put that whatever it is down, whether it's your TV, whether it's your computer, whether it's your iPhone, whatever it is, or the bottle, we could go there. If you can't put it down and walk away from it, it will be the same experience as a drug-addicted person or an alcoholic. Hats, you cannot handle it. You will get agitated. You'll get frustrated. You'll get angry. You'll get annoyed. I mean, there have been studies in Japan where they actually have clinics for people to escape, get them away from their iPhones. And these people are like they're in one of those asylums that we were talking about, or
Yeah.
They act like it. They go crazy because they're this is what happens to the brain, okay? There is certain input that we receive, you know, in the brain.
Dopamine.
So when you have, yeah, exactly. So what happens to it? But this is a deliberate, see. This is a plan. This is a deliberate thing that's going on with the populations. And that cartoon that I was watching was pretty stunning to see. I mean, I've seen videos of people walking across the street looking at their iPhone and falling in a manhole or getting hit by a car, or people walking off of cliffs because they're taking a selfie.
Oh, yeah, that was that Pokemon Go video game where people were, like, running around capturing virtual Pokemon and falling off of stuff.
Now, would you get involved in something like that?
Heck no, man. That's like I said, I wouldn't put those virtual goggles on for nothing, because here's the scary thought about that whole virtual goggles. Let's say, hypothetically, I put them on, right, and I go into this virtual world. Well, in the virtual world, I actually take them off, but something went wrong. I'm still in the virtual world, but I think I'm in the real world. I'm actually still sitting on my couch rotting away, and I don't know, you know?
Rotting away.
Yeah. Well,
there you go. Now, that is a perfect description of what's happening to the major percentage of populations all over the world. People are rotting away, stuck to these machines, and it's going to get worse, I'm afraid to say.
Yep.
So I wouldn't either. I don't have a cell phone. Well, let me say I have a cell phone because somebody bought me one. It's in my car. I don't even know how to use it. They bought it for me because I'm supposed to take it out into the land, 103 acres here, if I go walking like I do, and being in my whatever 70s, they're afraid that I might fall off a cliff, and I need to call somebody.
Yeah,
nobody will know.
That bad luck thing means that when you fall off the cliff, you're out of cell phone range.
That's true.
Better send smoke signals or something.
Well, so here's the thing. I'm adverse to technology. Now, I know technology is important, and technology, I feel everything is given to us for a reason. I feel the creation of things is given from a source, okay? But it doesn't mean, well, I'm going to say it's meant to be used for the good, okay? But there are people, unfortunately, who take these things and use them to exploit others or to do harm, right?
Yep.
So, therefore, this is just a piece that I just feel very strongly about. So I'm saying I'm adverse to technology where it ropes you in, where you're no longer a sovereign being. You know, our original nature is that we are sovereign, you know, all of us. We have been given free will. We have been given free will to choose. We are sovereign beings. This is our innate nature, or our true nature, I'll say. But now we've been inundated with technologies that are actually manipulating us, where we are no longer have free will. And that's called brainwashing. That's why I say the brainwashing has been systematic and incrementally being put upon us, you know. And we're talking about what is real here. And I've come to, in my life, questioning everything. I mean, I even kind of joke about, well, it's not really a joke, but I'm questioning it. I'm trying to make it a joke by saying, is my experience real? Am I real? I mean, I've come to that, and everything I look at now, you know, researching in the news and so on and so forth, I'm questioning our history, okay, the history of the world, or you could say even the history of humanity. Is it real? You know, there you go again. We have to question everything, and I guess... So, is Two Dog here? I guess I'm alone. So.
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, hi, Two Dog.
What's the deal? How you doing?
I'm doing good. Yeah, we're talking about reality, or is there a reality, or what is real these days? And I, you know, Shaziz and I have been going on this, going down that rabbit hole, and, you know, we're talking about the perceptions, of course, of people, the collective consciousness, and how do we know what is real? Is this world real? Is our experience real? Are we living in a virtual reality? I said to Patty last night, I said, you know, because we were going down a rabbit hole about the bloodlines, okay, about who the DNA of people and trying to find the DNA connectedness to the chosen ones, or supposedly the chosen ones, and that it's impossible to find that. I said, well, maybe that's because they were their ETs.
Anything's right? Possible.
So anything is possible.
Arthur C. Clarke, you remember the broadcast of War of the Worlds that they talked about years ago?
Yes.
Well,
I do.
That basically was just a radio show, but because people came in after the actual intro and tuned in, the next thing they know, they're hearing that the world was being invaded by aliens, and so that had real world consequences. There are stories out there that they say are myths that, you know, happened during that, but there are realities out there. Like, say, an old farmer, he's, thinking that there's aliens attacking, so he's got his shotgun out, and the poor next guy that comes through the door, he's in the doghouse, you know what I mean? So, you know, that kind of thing. And there was actually, here recently, an episode where they sent this emergency text out that said that, that there were, basically, intercontinental ballistic missiles heading towards, I think it was Hawaii. And so the people that got this text, they thought it was real. And some of them were putting their kids down storm drains because they believed that it was real. And that's the dangerous part of the deal, because we trust authority so much that if we get a text like that and it says this is a warning, and, you know, you've been told all this time that if there's ever a storm or whatever, or ever an episode, the emergency broadcast system would kick in and it would keep you informed on what's going on. That's how much power that they have to quite literally manipulate the minds and the beliefs of people that, you know, are basically trusting in their governments or whatever in order to, you know, keep them safe. So, with the new technology available, and, you know, there's a conspiracy theory out there, might be fact, but they say that, you know, one of the reasons why they keep spraying all that crud in the air during chemtrailing is so that they could use an old project called Project Bluebeam to project a three-dimensional object up in the sky. They could, you know, try to depict the return of Jesus, or maybe the attack of alien spaceships, you know what I'm saying? And so, with that, this is why we're saying, when you're out there, you should be questioning reality, not to the extent that you drive yourself into complete and utter paranoia and the conundrum of what is real and what isn't real, but to try to find yourself some sort of anchor in this reality that we find ourselves in. You know, if you want to make the world a better place, then you got to do something to make it a better place. What do you think?
Well, I just popped out for a second, but I wanted to go a little further with the War of the Worlds.
Yeah.
Because we may be heading for another one of those fake announcements.
Yep. May very well be.
Right, about the aliens are coming. And we have the other announcement of the Antichrist coming and the Messiah coming. And all these things are going to take discernment. All of these so-called happenings, if they do happen, how are we going to know? What will be real?
I don't know, but I just thought of something insane. What if all three of them happened at the same exact time?
Well, this is what somebody's suggesting. And so you're right on that. But I'm just saying, we may very well be meeting these types of things soon. This is a big possibility here. Now, you might question that. Why would that happen? Because there's certain things that we've been researching on both levels, on the hidden agenda or the deep state's agenda, the government or the military with the, you know, creating this advanced technology of UFOs, of flying machines that can do everything that is impossible. Why are they doing that? Then you have the Bible, you have the prophecies, you have the prophecies of our people, the Indian people. We talk about the appearance of the peacemaker, and the peacemaker came to Turtle Island long before Yeshua came to Jerusalem or appeared there in the Middle East. Now we're talking over 2,000 years then, right?
Yeah.
And we have these other stories, and people have called, you could call them myths, you could call them stories, but I have to say that in the tradition of our people, the Indian people, they didn't talk about things randomly or fantasy-wise. When they spoke the truths of their experiences that were handed down through generations, or their personal experiences, right?
Yeah.
It's called oral tradition. In order to pass things through generations with oral tradition, you have to be very alert and succinct with the information. You can't change it at all. It's not like the telephone game, you know, where somebody starts off telling you an experience and then it goes around the circle, and before you know it, when it comes back to you, it's like, you go, what? I didn't say that.
Yeah. You know, there's one common denominator in this entire deal that can't be overlooked, and that's the fact that the actual truth of the matter is the control, there's always been through the history of mankind, other men or whatever entities wanting to control. It's like if you're playing a video game and you're at the top, you want to stay at the top, and so you use every tool at your disposal to manipulate all the other characters in the game to be quite literally beneath you. You know, you're the king and they're the servants or whatever. And that is the power structure that, you know, what I was explaining about how that bug's life, that grasshopper in the bug's life is telling the grasshoppers that those ants outnumber us 10-1, and the moment they realize that, our way of life is over. And so everything that we've been talking about, all these wars, all these agendas, all these different episodes that's going on, that we're told is happening in the world, is all falls back to that same concept that grasshopper said. Our way of life changes, and they don't want their way of life changing because they're wealthy, they're powerful, they have everything that they need at their disposal, and they can quite literally manipulate entire nations just by the finances and the money and whatever craziness they want to test on you. You know, even this, to the extent of throwing light bulbs full of bacteria down in the doggone subways.
Yeah. That's right. Well, so here's the point that I want to make with the peacemaker, with Yeshua, with other holy beings that came, Buddha, Viracocha, and the white buffalo calf woman, by the way. They all brought the same message. Okay?
Yep.
The same exact message. And they also said that they would return.
Yep.
Now, okay, we know Yeshua is the Messiah, is supposed to return. That was the words. We also know that, well, the Antichrist is going to be a part of this whole thing, too. I believe the Antichrist, to me, Antichrist, to break up that word, anti. What anti means against.
Yeah.
Against. So what does Christ represent? So Christ consciousness, or Christ, the words of Christ, or the goodness, or the message that Christ came and brought. The same thing white buffalo calf woman brought, the same thing the peacemaker brought. What were the messages? They were identical. So anti that. Those that are anti that are, to me, the present on the earth already.
Yeah.
Right?
And every
I believe.
Single, oh, sorry.
What?
In every single game, there are rules that even the bad guys can't do. They can't violate certain rules. And so, if you go back and look at it just in that sense right there, We were given a set of rules that we should follow, and we
exactly.
were told that there would be consequences if we didn't follow these certain rules.
That's right, and there's as we know that there is dark and light, positive and negative. When you have positive rules, or rules to live accordingly by in order to create harmony and balance and goodness for all, you're going to have the opposing factor. That's the way the universe is set up, correct?
Yep. And so we're, we're in a battle. Really?
We are. Duh. And I'd say that it's a spiritual battle because it's about our own soul. It's about the earth, the survival of our coming generations. So the anti-goodness, the anti-love, the anti-joy, the anti-harmony, the anti-nurturing, everything that is against this, it's a factor, it's something energetic, it could be a being, it could be an actual. Back to the question, are angels real? Is God real? Is Satan real? Is Lucifer real? Am I real? Are you real? What is all this? You know, this is like the big piece right here. So where do we go? You know, it's sort of like, again, back to my own instincts.
Well,
all right, our instincts have been dulled.
Yeah.
They have been usurped, our natural instincts, because we have been given, as we're born, an innate fundamental nature, right, which is a conscious awareness, a free will to think, to choose, to feel what feels right, what feels good, what feels wrong, what feels bad. You know, the free will to choose either pathway, dark or light, you know, to brighten your life, to raise your frequency, to choose positives rather than negatives, choose to do good rather than harm. We're in the middle here.
Yeah. So would you say that phrase I put in there for the beginning of this show, everything in this world is real if you believe, would you say that's pretty close to reality?
Well, I do on a level, but now you have people's free will comes into play. So, yes, you could say that everything that you believe is real will be real for you, but are you choosing to believe in?
Yeah. Well, see, science believes in the Big Bang Theory. Creationists believe in the creation, you know, basically things spoken into existence, neither of which nobody alive today could prove because none of them was actually there to, like, you know, take photos or bring forth evidence.
Well, they're theories. That's why they call it a Big Bang Theory, right? But, you know, I know for one thing, I just feel that my ancestors were not monkeys. I just feel that.
I
don't
feel
know.
Too.
I'm not a scientist, right?
I didn't come from no monkey. I might look like one, but...
You might act like one.
Yeah.
And there's monkey business.
Yeah, there's definitely monkey business.
And there's the monkey mind.
Yep. There's definitely some of that. Like that monkey business when I show my wife that rusty nail sticking through a lemon, she gives me the evil eye. You think, see, if she's mad and gives me the evil eye like that, you know, and I show her that deal, you think that's going to calm her down or you think it's going to make the situation worse?
I think she's used to you by now.
Yeah.
And she's still hanging out with you, so that's a good sign.
All right, well, I'll give it a shot then. What do I got to
lose?
Mine hasn't killed me yet. Let's say that.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I want to talk about choosing the free will, because, okay, let's look at what Yeshua, the words of Yeshua, the white buffalo calf woman, the peacemaker, Kanku Khan, Viracocha, the feathered serpent, Buddha, all pretty much said the same thing. How does it feel when you hear the words that they are preaching or teaching or guiding us with, as opposed to the other side, okay, that tells us, you know, or teaches us or trains us or brainwashes us to be greedy, to be harmful, to be hateful, to be prejudiced, to be hurtful, you know, to be unkind, to be insensitive, how do these things feel, you know?
Well, when I hear Jesus' words, I feel it's truth. I feel it's what I resonate with. I mean, I don't want to hurt nobody. I don't believe
in healing. But does it feel good?
Yeah, it feels right.
What's the frequency that you feel?
Yeah, I guess I would call it warm and fuzzy, or, you know, it's hard.
Yeah.
I don't have no...
You could say warm and fuzzy, you could say positive, you could say a heightened frequency, or a good feeling, or, right?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, now, so when the other things are heard, you know, the other things, the negatives, the hateful things, or the harmful things, or the destructive things, or, you know... So me personally, I feel differently.
Yeah, I feel dark and cold when I hear stuff like that.
It feels worrisome, concerning, sad, disturbing, upsetting, so on, to me. Now, my question is, what prompts the part of the population to follow the rule of hate? To follow the rule of harm, to follow the rule of prejudices, and all that.
I would say that there's actually a portion of the population out there that are more in a rebellious stage. Like, you know, the little kid that always disobeys his mom and dad. He just wants to be honored. You know, he don't care what kind of attention, as long as he's getting attention. And so he will rebel against anything he's told. No, I'm not going to do that, or whatever. And so there's actually a portion of the population out there, like, let's say, I'm not cracking on any atheists out there, but atheists don't want to believe in God. Because if there really was a God, then that would mean they would have to actually be accountable to a higher power. And whereas they don't want to be accountable to anybody, including each other. They just want to be accountable to live their free will, their life by themselves, to be unobstructed by anybody else out there, which, you know, to some extent that's understandable. But if you're not accountable to something, some sort of higher power, there's no difference between right and wrong, then that means everything is okay to do. There's no right and wrong. You can do whatever you want. Do like Aleister Crowley said, do as thou wilt, you know, and basically the world is just a total chaotic mess. But since we all come to this conscious decision that we don't want to live in a chaotic world where people are just killing and raping and stealing from each other, we put some rules down. Well, somebody prior to us put some rules down, at least some golden rules, says, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, you know. And there was a good reason for that, because if you kill somebody, somebody's going to want to kill you. If you steal from them, same thing. You know, so there are some good common sense things in there, regardless of whether you think they were divinely inspired or not. You see what I'm trying to say here?
Well, so are you saying that people don't believe in consequences of their actions?
Well, I'm not saying that specifically, but there are people out there who, you know, don't want to have consequences to their actions. Like, if suddenly it was proven that beyond a shadow of a doubt that God was real, he was right there in your face, and now the storybook has just changed. You know for a fact that if you do something you ain't supposed to do, that this higher power has the power to take you out. So there's provable consequences. But because we have to rely on faith, whether it be science in theoretical sense or religion in spiritual or belief sense, we are at that free will to where we can actually choose whether to believe that there is or isn't a consequence, if that makes any sense.
Well, you know, I can give you a couple of things in my area, all right? A lot of the problem we have down here is you got one person going, okay, if we don't fight back, we will never be able to have a race on this planet again in America, you know. And that's of course race hate, which is incredibly stupid. But the other part, let's look at it, the other part. There was a individual from the Inuit that came to my territory to actually speak in the church. And he did. And I went and gave tobacco and welcomed them in my territory like I'm supposed to do. And there was like two or three different Indian groups, Indian organizations there with us. when we did this. And because he spoke and we were there in the church, they immediately fired the preacher because they found out he was part Cherokee, and we had to be escorted out of town because they were threatening to kill us because I welcomed them in my territory. Yeah. It's incredibly stupid.
Well, I think those of us with a, seems to me like, I'm just going to use these words because it's the only one that makes any sense in my mind, a higher consciousness, a being, or whatever you want to call it, that, you know, wisdom, that would be a good word, I guess, that, you know, we see this world and perceive it to be able to be a whole lot better, you know, for everybody. And we're talking about things like bringing the world together to accomplish this task.
Yes.
And at this time, you know, we see all these other things as ridiculousness. You know, why would you hate somebody just because they're a different color than you, or because they got a different culture than you? Their spiritual beliefs don't align in perfection with yours. You see
what I found out is that the church actually was talking about killing us because I welcomed that guy, and he came from the Inuit, and I came over here to welcome him in my territory. And we did it for a church. And actually, the church, the preacher did invite us there because he's part Solid Geek himself. He gets fired, and they threaten to kill us.
Wow. I see. That's the strange world that we live in. But once again, we got to question everything under the sun. Everything under the sun because of what's been going on throughout. You know, there's somebody in this world who wants to manipulate your mind in some direction or another, and they want to convince you of a reality, whether it is or isn't true, when in fact, if anybody out there says that they've got a total grip on her reality after all the evidence that has been presented, I'm saying, you know, that's questionable in itself. I couldn't tell you. That's why I told Stephen in the chat room up there at the top up there. Let me see if I can scroll back up and find my comment, because it basically says it all. I said, truthfully, whether it is or isn't has me baffled, so maybe I am on the fence in no man's land waiting for the facts to come in. Trying to get a grip on reality in this world is getting harder and harder by the day, and so the discernment is going to be, you know, before you start treating people like Two Dog just explained, you need to know the truth. You need to know the history, and then you need to question even the truth and the history because of the manipulation that, say, like whenever somebody goes and wins a war, they get to write the school books, they get to write the history. Maybe the folks that wrote this history were lying to you. You see what I mean?
I mean, a lot of people that has looked at the history books still believe that Custer had his long blonde hair. He actually cut it before the battle.
Everybody knows he could have had an afro, you know?
Well, he cut his hair before the battle. Everybody knew that.
Well,
every Indian knew that anyway. You know who that
well, see, that's the thing is, if you want to question somebody's culture, the best way to go ask them about what was the truth is go ask them personally because they lived it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's what I would do. If I had a question about your culture, I'd come over and say, you know, hey, this is what I heard. What do you think about that? You know, and you could explain to me. Like, I have learned so much over the time when I've been talking to you and Barbara and Patty that, you know, I learned things about your culture. And I'm watching it like a movie as you're telling me, and I'm understanding how that works and stuff, you know. And, you know, I still walk my own personal spiritual journey, but I'm still not discounting yours because the truth of the matter is we all may be, like Patty or Barbara says all the time, we may all be praying to the same God. You even say it in your prayer, Two Dog, that, you know, whatever it is that they call you, you know, when you're talking to the grandfather.
You know,
and so, you see what I mean?
Well, here's the thing, Rick. You know, here's the whole thing is, you know, the thing about it is, I may call my creator Gitche Manitou, okay? Barb calls the Wakon Tonka, Kakashula, you call him God, and you talk of Jesus.
Yeah.
Everybody in the world has a different name for the creator. But the point of it is, there's only one. Okay, so in aspect, what I'm trying to say is that we all around the world have different languages, okay? So within that different language, there's a different name for the great mystery, for God. There's a different name.
Yep.
So we call him different name around the world, but there's only one.
Well, the other thing is we call him different names or her different names.
Mm-hmm.
This omniscient energy of unconditional love. And I say that because I do believe if you just look outside at nature and you study nature and you can look at even what the scientists have come up with about the sacred geometry and how everything consists of this miraculous golden rule, somebody or something had to have a mind, a consciousness about creation, how to create something so miraculous, because that's how I look at it. So whatever that is, whether it's Wakantak, Kashala, Gichimantu, God, had a conscious awareness of beauty, of joy.
Yeah.
And you have to have an unconditional love of beauty. Let me finish.
All right, sorry.
So we look at these, we look at the words, God, Gichimanitu, Wakantanka, Tukashala, Great Spirit. We look at all these words, but the essence of this omniscient one, or the essence of this mystery, is all the same. Because basically, they all carry the same message.
Yep. I was about to say, I'm sorry I interrupted you, but I was about to say, because something you said to me just, resonated. What I feel like I learned from nature was that love was the universal truth.
Yeah.
And I don't see where you could go wrong loving anybody, It's, not only does it feel good, it's a healing power. You can love somebody and take care of them, or you could hate them and destroy them. You see what I mean?
What I'm saying on the other part of this is what I'm saying is the frequency, the vibrational frequency of creation,
yeah,
that we see it, is on a high frequency. Something so unbelievably, I guess we could only call it divine, because the word divine, is formed from the word divination, and divination is a form of manifesting. So divine, as we know it, is something sacred or special, right?
Yeah.
So this is where I'm going at. This is a frequency, okay? There's a high divine frequency. I use the term unconditional love because there are no conditions to unconditional love. There's no expectation to unconditional love. All right? It's just there. It exudes this beautiful frequency, right, of joy. I'm going to say joy because to me, when I look at nature, I feel joy. And I feel the joy of this wonderful, extraordinary nature, this creation. Every part of it is awesome.
Yeah.
And then when you start to getting into the scientific aspect of it, it even becomes more awesome. It's just beyond our imagining, right? So I'm just saying that I think that we're here to learn about this frequency of unconditional love and joy because we were created with that same frequency.
Well, I think that when I look out there in this world and I see the amazing beauty out there and I see the complexity and something as simple as watching a little baby kitten or a rabbit come by, and you can look at in that the face of those little animals and you can feel something. It's so powerful. It's like your heart melts, if you're actually paying attention. It's like there's a little soul there, there's a little life there, a little being or whatever, and they're happy, they're sad, they feel things, if you're mean to them, they get depressed and stuff like that. And so I'm thinking, how could all this be just an accident? How could it just be, you know, random chaos from an explosion that blew everything apart? But even in the science community, the way that they explain the existence of everything out there, they're basically, they said that gravity or, you know, it's magic. They don't know. You know?
They don't know, and they don't know, they can't, since the time of the Greek philosophers, nobody has the answer.
Nobody has the answer.
That's where we are.
It's thousands of years, and if we've been around for billions of years, then we've evolved from squiggly things to fish to monkeys or whatever, to lizards. However, if we've been around that long and then we still to this day don't have the mysteries of the universe, then there might just be something higher than us that has all those answers, and maybe we're not ready to know it yet because we ain't figured out how to get along.
But you know something? There is the way that the elders speak, and they call it the great mystery.
Yeah?
The great mystery, meaning we're not going to know totally what this is all about until a certain point in time, I feel.
Well, so if people in this world have the potential to literally manifest their reality, then, you know, they're living in the world that they choose because, you know, once again, I got to keep going back to that Bug's Life deal because that is so profound why they put it in a movie. I don't know, maybe it was a hint to something that we needed to learn, but that grasshopper is telling them other grasshoppers that those ants, they outnumber us 10-1, and the moment that they realize that, our way of life changes. And so, for all the propaganda and all the manipulation and agendas out there, there's a purpose behind everything that's going on out here. These folks, they don't want to lose their way of life. They don't want you to actually understand what is real and what isn't real. And as long as they can keep that, you know, it's like the man behind the curtain thing. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. As long as they can keep that question out there, is this real? Is that real? Did we go to the moon? Did we didn't go to the moon? Is there or isn't there a God? You know, is there a difference between black, white, red, yellow, or whatever? You know, all these different labels that we even tack onto each other, all the things that we, you know, twist and manipulate one another, and truthfully, we actually inadvertently do manipulate each other via our actions. So if I'm acting nice to you, I can get you to act nice, you know, unless you're a jerk, but you see what I'm saying?
Well, you know, here's the thing about black, red, yellow, white, and now brown.
Yep.
The rainbow people, the rainbow nations, we don't see the inside. We only see the outside, and that's a color thing, right? Because people are programmed to look at that as different. And the program is because you're not pure white or whatever, or you're not pure this, or you're not pure that, then you are different and you're not like me or us or whatever. But inside we're all the same. We all have a heart. We all have lungs. We all have a liver. We all have kidneys. We all have red blood, you know. We're all the same. But we are rainbow nations. Why is that? You know, we speak different languages, but we all know what we're saying when we give a smile, or lend a hand, or reach out for somebody. We all know what that means. You don't have to speak the same language. But Creator created us, gave us all similarities, you know, and some differences. Okay, but it's sort of like, what is the reason that the lion would lie down with the lamb? That's a question for you. What does that signify?
For peace. Here's something exactly. That might get me thrown up in the crazy house. Years ago, I was a victim of a certain circumstance that put a steel pipe upside the back of my head. So I got a little piece of metal wedged in my skull at this particular point in time, and I got a dent and a big old knot on the back of it. But ever since then, my life changed. I see the world in such a different fashion than I've ever. It's like my brain rerouted itself. There's really no way to explain to you what it is that I see when I see people. But
they probably affected your pineal gland, which gives you the third eye opening.
Well, I remember how I saw people prior, in like color and all this kind of stuff. But the way that I see people and the world in general, it's almost like something you would see in, I guess the best explanation would be some sort of like infrared FLIR cameras. I see energy. I don't see it like, it's really hard to explain, Barbara, but this is my reality. And time for me at that point in my life stopped. To this very day, I couldn't tell you whether it's been 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 10 days, or whatever. I have no concept of time. And so unless I'm actually carrying around a timepiece where I can look down every so often and see what time it is so that I can stay on the same pattern or realms with everybody else and not be late or whatever. If I ain't looking at a watch, I spent 3 days in my lab one time. Didn't even know I hadn't ate or slept or anything. I was there for 3 days and everybody looking for me. And I had been in my lab all the time, but I had lost track of time. And so that's the kind of world that I live in. And as I'm watching things, if you could take a videotape and you could put it on fast forward and watch that like a movie, everything's moving that fast to me. And one of the things that really, really affects me every single morning when I wake up, because it's a new day, if I go past a mirror and I look in the mirror, I got a 19-year-old mind in a 50-some-odd-year-old body. And it's really hard to contend with. It's really hard to deal with because as a 19-year-old, you don't want to look like an old man. You see what I mean? And so that's my reality ever since that particular episode where basically my skull was damaged and, I don't see the world like I did before. But even to that extent, when I'm out there in nature and I'm seeing things that it's just, I can't explain, because unless you could actually see through my eyes to witness what it is that I'm talking, you'd think I was just flat out nuts. But it's my reality. And so,
well, it may very well be the reality.
Well, if it is, I wish that at any given time, I wish that everybody could experience your vision, Two Dog's vision, and my vision, all in one setting. Just like walk through one at a time, go through and see what it is that we saw when we saw it through our eyes, and then they would have a little bit better understanding of why it is that we feel that this journey that we're on is so important and why we keep doing these shows like this. Because I see a beautiful world out there. I mean, it's beyond all kinds of words that you just can't formulate human words. But the experience that I had in my vision, where I'm quite literally standing in the presence of God, what my perception of God is, and to feel that kind of love, feel that kind of energy, if you wanted to say anything bad, you couldn't do it. You could not, in the presence of that kind of love or energy, do or say or even think anything remotely bad. Now, to me, that was a life-altering experience. Going back to the pipe incident all the way up there, you could say, oh yeah, well, he's delusional because he got clocked with a pipe. Well, maybe that is the reality.
And well, that's what the scientists would say.
Yeah, but for me, the actual journey that I'm on right now, I'm moving at supersonic speed, watching everybody around me go really fast, where time for me has quite literally stopped in its place. I don't know how long I'm sitting here looking at this computer. I can tell you it's 10:08, and I can tell you that means that since we've been on here for a couple hours, but I'd never take a look at that computer. We could be on here for 5, 10, who knows how long until you guys finally got tired. So I got to go to sleep, man. I don't know how you do it. You see what I mean?
Well, something's happening with the people, you see, because people are saying, they are experiencing different times. So they're saying, time is speeding up for me. I feel like time is speeding up. And somebody else will say, no, I feel like it's slowing down.
Yeah.
So that's their reality. It doesn't mean that it's not real or true, but in their experience, see, this is what the thing is. We all have our personal experiences for specific reasons. Why would time be speeding up for some and time be slowing down for others? I can't answer that, but I know it's happening on both levels. I do know that. I've experienced both of them. I've experienced throughout a month, 1 month, for instance, giving you an example, that there would be perhaps a week or two where suddenly time is flying. I mean, literally flying. My experience is that time has flied by so fast. And then another week or so, it'll shift down to my experience as time is so slow.
Yeah.
And these are real experiences to me. Now, other people have been expressing this.
Yeah.
Why is that happening? What's the big picture here? Why? So that, I guess you could say, well, every one of us is experiencing life on a different level. Every one of us. And that makes sense, right? Like every one of us will see something, we're looking at the same thing, but we each perceive it differently, right?
Yep.
So what does that mean in the bigger picture? It's according to maybe what we are meant to see, or maybe where we are on the training ground of life, or on the training ground of awareness, conscious awareness. Is speeding up time correct or right?
Someone
is slowing down time correct or right? I don't know. I think it's got to do with individuality. What do you think?
Well, some would call it a glitch in the matrix because, yeah, I don't know if you ever watched that movie, The Matrix. I can't remember what the guy's name. But there was one scene where this cat kept coming through the door frame, and it's like, what's going on? And somebody said that was a glitch in the matrix. Basically a computer program had a flaw in it or something like that. Well, now, in my brain, at least, some would say that there's a computer program flaw in my brain because how the brain sends the information.
But is it a flaw? You see, there's the thing. Is that a flaw, or is it your reality that's meant to be that way?
Well, for me, it's my reality, and it makes me see things in a completely different fashion. It makes me step back and look at everything, every detail. I'm almost like a kid at a candy store when it comes to life, and I can actually, I told this to my wife one day, I said, you know, every single day I fall in love with you over again. And one day I was standing in the store and I was watching her, look through the shelves at things that she found interesting and, you know, maybe it's something that she maybe wanted to buy for herself, you know. And when I said I was standing back and when I saw you looking through there, I saw your life. I saw you. I saw the real you. And I fell in love with you all over again.
Well, so I'm looking at this, everyone's personal timeline. I'm going to say timeline.
Yeah.
I do believe, and I'm not talking about the death, you know, it's time to die, but I'm talking about the journey. Okay, so we're all on this life journey, and we are all on different timelines with this life journey experience. It's like when we talk about the elders telling stories, you know, like when we sit around and the elders are telling the stories. You first start to hear this story when you're in your mother's womb. Okay? You do hear the story. You do hear what's going on around you.
Yeah.
So you first start absorbing this information, these words, the cadence, the rhythm, that whole thing of the story. You may not understand the words, but something is coming through to you. You get a sense of something. You could get a sense that the storyteller may be raising their voice to impress a certain situation or various things. You get the sense, the sensory of this voice. Then when you're born and you're a little infant, you still are receiving the same story because that's what the elders do. The people gather, the elders tell the story. The same stories are teachings. They're opportunities to learn. Now, we don't learn everything at once. We just don't. we are able to absorb everything, but we don't understand it or understand it all at once. This is how life is. In my own personal experiences, there were things that I believed in, as we're talking about what's real, what's not real, I believed in and thought was real or whatever, that now as an adult I say, well, they weren't real, you know, they really were not. It actually something different. So we're all on this life experience or this life journey, and we all individually have a timeline of understanding things or coming to realize certain things, or, you know, coming to gain something that is important for us. And those words, important for us, is significant, because what might be important for me in my life may not be important for you in your life experience, right?
Yeah.
So that's why I'm saying we're all individuals here. We're experiencing various timelines of understanding, of knowledge, of wisdom, and things that are coming to us that are important.
Well,
so that's why I'm saying, we can't just lump us all together and say, well, this is real, period, just, you know, accept it and that's real, because it may not be real for you in that moment.
Well, that's why I think that people should be patient with one another, because just because certain people don't believe like you or look like you or have traditions like you, you know, they're on their own personal journey, and we're all on our own personal journey. And so there's one thing I said to, my friend has a daughter, and she's going through some really hard times, and I told her, I said, you know, don't let anybody degrade you, because your creator, you are a one of a kind. There may be a million people with your same name, but there's only one Shayla, there's only one you. There is only one person in this world who can do things and say things the way that you do. So you are, you're unique, and you're special. And nobody has a right to take that away from you. And that's what I want everybody to take away from this deal today. In this world that we live in, you are special. We live in this reality together. And so if we want to make this reality the best that we can possibly make and finally reach some sort of higher stage of enlightenment, we got to figure out something. Each one of us is just one piece of the puzzle. All right, and we all together make up that big picture. And so if we're living in a terrible world, it's because we choose to live in that terrible world. See,
well, or we see it as a terrible world.
Yeah.
It's got to be from your perception. And I'm going to say that what I hear you saying, and I'm going to say this, is that, okay, if we're all on our own life journey and our experiences are unique, some of them may seem similar, but they are ultimately unique for each one of us, because we are incrementally moving along on a journey in life. There are certain timelines that we experience, a certain understandings or realizations come to us. We change over time. So I'm going to say that my perception, my belief is that everything happens for a reason, and everything is perfect as it is in the moment.
Yeah.
That's what I'm going to say. So what do you think about that? So how to look at life that way, okay, that everything is perfect, that everything happens for a reason. Now, the reason, there's the piece right there. What is the reason? Why did that happen to so-and-so, and why did this happen to me? And I think that that's up to us to discern that or determine what we want to gain or realize or understand about what happened.
Yeah.
It's in our hands. It's our free will. We can choose, in other words, to say, well, I had this, you say, like, you got hit over the head and your whole life changed and your perception changed and something happened to you, which is pretty miraculous. Somebody else could say, oh, I got hit over the head and it was lousy and terrible and I feel, you know, angry and I'm going to blame God.
Yeah.
And they don't see the gift in this experience. In my personal experience, and I'm all sharing experiences, that everything that happened to me in my 74 years of life, I can now look at as was meaningful and meant to bring me here to this moment in time, talking to you, okay, and sharing with you, and it was all good, because that's the way I'm choosing to receive this, because there were things that were miraculous and good out of stuff that somebody else would perceive as a bunch of crap.
Yeah, I get it. I get it. You know, and on that choice thing, there's a Rush song out there. I can't remember the actual name of the song, but there's a part in there where it says, even if you choose not to make a choice, you still chose.
You're making a choice.
Yeah. So there's a conundrum for you. Even if you choose not to make a choice, you still made a choice to choose not to make a choice.
Well, that's true. I mean, Rush is what they said in that Rush song is absolutely true.
Yep.
So what we're saying here is that it's all about how we perceive, what we believe we are creating, manifesting, okay? What my experience may be, you may look at it as something horrible and that it was terrible that happened. I'm saying that my experiences, and I can claim this now, I didn't in the moment, of course, but I also had an instinct that there was something, or perhaps there was something that I could actually garner from that experience that would be an important opportunity for me to learn something, not only about myself, but about life and other people. We are all part of our experiences. We all create our own experience. Now, if something goes awry in your experience, the gift in that experience means that there's something about yourself that you've made a certain choice. It may involve another person. It may not, but you had a participation in that. Yeah. And if you look at life that way, you may be able to move through life a little bit better, better flow, rather than stopping in a, let's say, a swamp and just standing there complaining.
Well, I understand that because I spent the majority of my life after that episode because of my reality just went completely into the twilight zone. I spent the majority of my life after that until I come to some wisdom, part of which was that help that I got from a turtle, as crazy as that might sound, but I spent most of my life angry and mad at the world because, how dare somebody do that to me? But now, looking back in retrospect, it has been a benefit, and I don't just believe my life, but other people's life, because I honestly feel, and I don't know where the words of wisdom come from, but I say some pretty cool things out now and then. I even shock myself.
Well, you know something? I do the same thing. I go, was that me talking? Wow,
yeah.
It's like that. But I want to say that it's up to us. Whatever happens to us in life, we have free will.
Yeah.
We can choose to look at it as a gift. We can find the gift in that experience. There is always one. I have discovered that, by the way. And the gift is about ourself. The gift is learning something about ourselves, okay? How we perceive things, what we want to choose to do from that point of that experience and move forward. So I'm saying that because this has been my personal experience. It's not been easy. It certainly took me many years to realize this. But it's up to us. Again, everything comes back to us. We are the central focus point here of our life experience. Nobody does anything to us unless we're involved in it. And then how do we perceive it? Okay, nobody can hurt us, really, like words, but people, like they say, sticks and stones will break my bones, but words will never hurt me. So how do you perceive, receive, and experience and choose through your free will to live your life according to what is going on, what is happening, what participation are you involved in? Because we are participating and involved in every aspect of our life.
Well, you could say
so and so did this to me, and so and so did that to me. My parents messed my life up, and blah 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 blah. I mean, you can live your life like that if you choose.
Because now,
or you can choose something else, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because now that I'm in tune to actually listening to what people say, I actually took some advice from Ozzy. I learned how to love and forgot how to hate because I was carrying around that anger. And in all reality, all that anger was doing was dragging me to the dirt.
Well, that's what anger does. It makes you sick. You see, this is the point that people have to know. The power of anger. The power of love. Okay, what does it do to us physically, emotionally, and spiritually? This is going on every moment of our life. How we choose to view life. How we choose to see ourselves and others. And what is surrounding us. Everything has an effect. Everything is connected and related to it and has an effect upon all else. So, it's back to free will. Creator gave us all free will to choose. It's up to us how we want to relate to our lives. What are you focusing on? That's going to be what you create. Yep. Okay? It's a period. It's just a simple thing. It makes sense. If you're constant, if you're overruled and run, if your life is being run by anger and frustration and feeling, you know, like helpless and the world's against you, like that victim mentality, get over it. Victim mentality. Nobody's out to harm you. Like, you're not the, you know, God isn't pointing at you and say, okay, you know, we're going to punish you. You know, that if you could say that if you want, you could choose that if you want. That's the victim mentality.
Well, that's what I felt like. I felt like the whole world was out to get me.
Exactly. Well, the whole world has your name and your number, and they're running right towards you full speed ahead.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about that experience because, to me, here's the piece. Okay, I had that, what is called the near-death experience. It's NDE. Okay, or out-of-body experience. Now, there's two different types here. There's the one where you are clinically pronounced dead. That means you've had an accident, or your heart stopped, or you got hit over the head by a pipe, or something like that, right?
Yeah.
But you're clinically declared dead, and people have been clinically declared dead and gone to the light. Okay, they come back because they're revived, because pretty much, you could say, well, they're not meant to die right now, and that's oftentimes the message to people. It's not your time yet. You have to go back. And in that moment, when you are in that light, you go, oh my God, I don't want to go back. Because there's a reason. The other side of this is a non-traumatic near-death experience, which means you're not in any circumstance or situation where you are clinically diagnosed as dead, where your heart stops. That's the one I had. I was actually driving a car with my two sons in the car, and I left my body. I was taken into this light. I did say at that time that I saw God, okay? I didn't really know what this was. That's the only way I could describe it, because it felt like that. How would I know what that felt like? I don't know. Yeah. I just know that that's what I chose to say, because it felt so much like that, and I can't even describe that. But so over years, I got this book called Life After Death. Dr. Raymond Moody wrote this book. He was a clinician who studied many people who had these experiences, and he got very intrigued by this because after years of talking and writing down and documenting people's experiences. Now, thousands of people from all walks of life who had this near-death experience said pretty much the same thing. It was described as exactly the same. So he became intrigued by that. He was like, how can all these different types of people, all different, you know, doesn't matter their religion, nothing, they all had the same experience, and what that experience is so profound that the first thing a person says who has this experience, and I have said it too, I cannot describe to you in words what it felt like, right? Now, why is that? Because we don't have that experience on Earth as an awake human being, or let's say as a living human being, because it's not here for us. It is after life. What?
I got to tell you something, because what you're talking about, it reminded me of my last day when I left that ship back in, I believe it was 85. When I actually left that ship, I turned around and I looked back at the ship for one last time, and I saw myself quite literally standing on that ship, and then I turned around and walked away.
Right. Well, so I am in this experience. By the way, my body, my physical self, is still driving the car. You can believe it or not, I don't care. I just know what my experience was. And I've read of other people's. I know of a friend of mine had another, a friend of hers had a similar experience where she drove miles and miles, her physical body drove miles and miles to a destination that was intended while she was in the light, okay, while she was out of her body. So here's how I look at this. So there's this spiritual consciousness, or the spirit that is embodied within us is a consciousness, okay? It's the true self. Now, then we have the physical self, right? Ego and all that other stuff. So somehow, leaving the body, who is it or what is it that leaves the physical body and travels into this light? Who is it or what is it that leaves the body and goes to a journey to visit someone on the other side of the world? People call this, you know, out-of-body journeying, okay? Who is that? What is that? Because you're aware, you are consciously aware of yourself in the light and consciously aware of yourself standing at the foot of the bed of your friend who lives across the world, but your physical body's back there asleep or whatever, or meditating to get yourself out of the body. Who is that? What is that? Interesting, right? So I'm looking at this over years trying to figure this out because in my experience, I'm in this light, and the light is brilliant. I mean, it's not hurting, but it is brilliant. I'm aware of it, okay? I don't have a body. I don't have a physical body. My physical body's in the car driving. But it's my awareness, let's say my conscious awareness is in this light. The light is not hurting me, but it's so brilliant, it's unimaginable. And the feelings that I am experiencing are so profound that it is hard to describe, as all people say when they're trying to describe this, because it's a form of love that is not experienced here as a human being. We do love, but this love is unimaginable. It's so profound. So, the feelings of bliss, okay, you could say, well, I was just blissed out, right? But you do not know this feeling until you are in that light. And some people call it, I guess it was Betty Eady who wrote a book, Embraced by the Light, okay? She had a near-death experience. So, and people talk about that light, or they see God, or they see an angel, or whatever it is. Some people have different experiences, but the sensation is the same. They describe it as the same. Undescribable love, undescribable bliss, undescribable joy.
Heaven.
Okay. Well, you could say.
Yeah.
You could say, people could say it was like heaven, but how do you know?
I don't know.
How do you know? How do we know? We don't know. But all I know is my own personal experience. So then when I was told that I had to go back, wow, this was the most, this was the experience that was profound, because I felt resistance, a tremendous resistance. My conscious self began to resist. I did not want to come back to Earth. I had two sons. I had an okay life. You know, things were fine, but my thought, my connectedness to Earth was not present. And this is interesting, okay? So I've been looking at this for over years. Why wasn't I thinking of my sons? Number one, two small sons. Why wasn't I thinking of the life that I wanted to continue to live? Why wasn't I feeling fear? Why wasn't I feeling depression? Why wasn't I feeling guilt? Why wasn't I feeling anything that we feel here on this earth as a human being? Why did that not exist while I was embraced in this profound light? Ah, that was a good question. It took me many years to ask that question, actually. Well, what that did for me was show me that because we're here on earth and we experience these things, we are emotional beings. We experience life. We experience depression. We experience fear, anxiety. We have ego. We have all these systems here that we're dealing with, that we're trying to move through. But within us is this spirit, which is our fundamental true nature. And that's the spirit, or the conscious self, that went into this light, I'm going to say back home, because that's what it feels like to me. It feels like source. And none of our earth experience exists there. The depression, the guilt, the sadness, the sorrow, the grieving, the loss, the anger, the frustration, all that stuff doesn't exist, because that's just our earthbound experience only. The real true experience, or we could say home or source or our origins, is a whole other experience. None of this stuff that we experience here as a human being the big challenges, the big trials, and so on, does not exist there.
Wow.
That's it.
Well.
That's, oh wait, there's more. I just want to finish this, because when I was resisting and I felt myself being shifted back to go down back to earth and to the car and my body, I was resisting. The energy was so powerful. I was terrified. I didn't want to go back. I didn't want to leave the source of love, divine, extraordinary love that is indescribable here. You don't know. My words mean nothing to the listeners about what I'm trying to describe about that love.
Yep.
Just doesn't exist. You don't know until you get there. But I was on my way, and the resistance was so powerful. And then as I'm entering into my body, as I saw my physical self in the car, it's like within split seconds, right, that this happens. And I heard this voice that said to me, so reassuringly, said, no matter what, everything will be all right. And whoom, I'm in my body. And the tears are rolling down my eyes. I'm driving the car. My kids are not aware of anything. And that was so profound, those words. No matter what, everything will be all right. And I believe that means, because where we're going, none of this will matter. None of the stuff we're dealing with here, none of this crap, none of this worry, none of this fear, none of this anxiety, none of the guilt, none of the rage, the anger, the prejudices, the hate, all this stuff that we're dealing with here, it will not matter.
Well, and with that said, that I'm kind of like, you know, that whole concept of if life gives you lemons, make lemonade. I'm kind of thinking, if we got to be in this world, and the perception that everybody has of this world and what we've been told is truth and whatever, if we got to be in this particular reality, and from what I've witnessed so far, that we got some work cut out for us. But nonetheless, I want to make the best out of a bad situation. I want
to
make...
Well, we're here to do that, you see. This is, again, because this is our reality at this point, although we're questioning reality. Because I think real reality is something else. But we are here as a human being with a spirit embodied with us, and you can believe that or not, I don't care. But we are here as a human being with ego. We have many challenges. We're given many insights and information and understanding if we choose to go there. So we can either choose, again, Creator gave us free will, we can choose to make a good life here, be kind, be compassionate, be loving, be caring, be in unity, be strong together, turn our backs against the evil, the dark, and the fear, and all that stuff, get out of the matrix while we're here. What a concept. I think it's up to us. What do we want to do? Again. But ultimately, we will return to source, I do believe.
Well, I believe.
And the word,
right.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is why I'm still a firm believer. I'm always telling everybody I believe in the dream, and I do. I believe in the dream, because if I look out there and I see everything that we have, and I know the science to it, I know all the different things that I've researched all my life, and I see the possibilities, and I even know the prophecies, but... Even if with all that, you know, contemplating all that into one pile, if we really decided to, if we as a human race or species or beings or whatever, if we chose to fix this world, it is within our power to do so. Even if you think that we create our own reality, if that's the case, then we should be creating our perfect reality. I honestly believe, as crazy as it sounds and as almost an impossible task, that we have within our power to quite literally bring about a heaven on earth. Now,
well, supposing that's what we're supposed to be doing to make it better for those that are following us.
Yeah. Well, that's...
I'm just saying, supposing as one big family of spirits or souls, this is a soul experience. We all signed up for this. All you guys out there, you know, Grizz and Red and Joan and Herman and Clan Fadrian and Charles Two Dog, you, Stephen, supposing we all signed up for this as a collective soul journey. I'm just saying, I do believe we signed up to come back here to create a heaven on earth. I really do, and it's up to us. And I also feel that perhaps, you know, I feel strongly that I have been here before. As a matter of fact, I'm going to say I know I have been here before in past lives. And again, you can believe that or not. I don't care. I'm just sharing my experience with you. I'm just planting seeds here. If you want to let it grow inside of you, that's fine. You know, I'm not trying to convince anyone. I'm just sharing my experience and the things that I feel that I've come to understand. I have had past life experiences, and they've been very profound and really meaningful and true to me. So supposing on our next journey back here, we hit the ground again running, and we come back into what we've left here. Okay, because it's up to us what we're going to create for the next coming generations. And in our elders' way, the elders always spoke to us that we are, whatever we do here, the choices that we make, the way we live our lives here, will leave something for the coming generations, and it's important what we leave. So let's say all of us are going to come back here. Let's say we are the future, okay, returning here now, okay, to create this heaven on earth, to right the wrong, so that when we come back again in that time, when the time is right, that what we've created here, we've left for ourselves as so far better than it has been left prior to us.
Yep, and that's all I can ask of anybody, is to try to do it as best you can, one positive pebble at a time, if that's the best we can do. You know, everything you do positive for somebody, you know, it just ripples out. The positive pebble in the pond. It's a reality in this reality, whatever this reality actually is. If you actually take a stone in your hand and you throw it in a pond, you'll see those ripples. They will go and they will affect every single thing inside that pond in some form or fashion. You'll either scare a fish off or, you know, disturbs another fish's sleep, if fish do sleep, I don't know. But the thing about it is, that's a power that we have. You know, we have that power to affect one another, and we do that via our words and our actions. And, you know, if your goal was to convince me that our the end of our journey was to end up where love is, that's where I want to go. That's where Jesus said to be. You know, so we're on the same path as far as I'm concerned. You, Two Dog, me, and everybody's listening in. Maybe we're all gathered here, and the folks that are actually listening into this show, maybe they're all gathering because of a reason, a purpose. They all resonate with you know, our version of the truth, is which is that, you know, love, it should be the one that reigns supreme. I don't like living in the darkness. Do you?
Well, if we were, if you think that or believe that we are co-creators, that everything we believe and think of and focus on and speak, that we are manifesting, we are in the process of co-creating on a continual basis with our thoughts, with our emotions, because these are frequencies and energies. So if you are angry, that's a frequency that you are emanating out from you, and you are creating anger, okay? Because the people around you feel it. If you are filled with love and gratitude, okay, the people around you are going to feel that. But it's just not that personal, intimate experience. This goes out throughout the web. We are all connected, okay? That's how it goes. So how are we connected? Energetically, we are connected. We are connected through frequency, through our behavioral patterns. Exude an energy, a frequency, a wave of energy, a filament of frequencies that move out from us, as we are the central point of everything that we do, and we are manifesting and co-creating everything that we believe in and think and speak, and words and our emotions all have frequency and energy. This is the way of the world, and you can turn to the scientists, and yes, the scientists will now tell you that that is true. Through the string theory, through all this blah blah stuff, whatever. But we as elders have known this from the beginning, because the word Metakuyeo Yasin means we are all related. It doesn't just mean, oh yeah, you're a human being. No, it means we are related energetically. You see, this is what this means.
Yeah.
So if you follow this rule or creator's law of one, capital O-N-E, Creator's Law of One. We are all one. So what I'm feeling in any given moment, the people around me feel it too. That's just how it goes. But it's not just there, my immediate family, because I am sending out that frequency. That's how we create. That's how we manifest. This is extraordinary. If you get this piece, if you know how powerful you are, how powerful everyone is, that we are involved in a form of creating, manifesting our experience and others' experience, this will blow your mind. So we are not powerless. It's extraordinary what Creator gifted us, or whomever you want to say gifted us. We were born with this. This is amazing because we are all energetic beings who exude a frequency, as does all of creation, all of nature.
Yep. Well, here in this world, we gather in groups and tribes and societies, and, you know, we try to, you know, get some sort of organized thing going on, and a lot of times it ends up pretty bad, like all the governments that have ever existed seem to come to the same, you know, ending, with exception, ironically, here in America. This is the longest lasting government that's ever been because of the way that it was designed. But I still keep coming back to this what if scenario. What if that people finally realized our true purpose for being here? You know, right now, it can't be our true purpose to run around there doing all the terrible things that we do to each other. And, you know, even to some extent, how do we even know what is really being done and what isn't? Because we can't even get a truth from what we believe to be the mainstream media, or even in the alternative media. There are so many lies and deception, and the water is so murky that in order to find out, I said this before we was on a radio show, that it's almost like on an Easter egg hunt. You're trying to find, you know, little nuggets of truth to find out, you know, get a grip on what's you know, what's really going on here. But you know, maybe the best that we excuse me maybe the best that we can do is to take our personal lives and our personal spiritual journeys and lay down smooth paving stones for our children to be able to walk into the future, to do the best that we can until everybody comes to this, you know, great awakening where they all start to see what it is that we're saying, and they understand what it is that we're talking about as far as, you know, making this world a better place, and actually start to work together. You know, we said this on so many shows out there, that every single time there's like a natural disaster or a tragedy, you have the average Joe rushing in there, and they're the ones that are taking care of each other and feeding each other. It's not never the governments. They always get in there last for the photo op, but it's the actual people that get in there and do the work. Imagine if they could do that work all year round, regardless of whether there was a tragedy or not. This reality that we live in, this journey that we're all on, if we all chose to get here, somehow or another we were confused when we got here and didn't realize what our mission was anymore. I don't know, maybe we got amnesia and didn't know that this is our purpose, to come down here and try to make this world better because it was so messed up. You know, I hope that makes sense, but it's the best sense I can make of the situation that I feel like the world's in. Otherwise, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing, you know. The Knights of the Round Table is to bring all these minds to the table, put all the issues on the table, and figure out the resolutions, the solutions necessary, and then inspire ourselves and each other to enact those solutions to make this world better. You know, people that go out and feed the hungry, or, you know, go out there and try to find homes for the homeless, and, you know, find cures for sick. Those are all people that are doing positive things for the world. At the same time, we've got other knuckleheads running around poking holes in the same boat that we're all living in. You know, polluting our environment, you know, and, you know, basically polluting each other's mind and treating each other poorly and all that kind of stuff. We've witnessed this for so many years, thousands of years, you know, and if we could ever come to the realization that all the mistakes that we made in the past can be avoided in the future for our children, I think that that's the best job that we could do. You know, if I'm going to stand before my Creator and have to justify my actions in the world, the first portion of my life, I got some splaining to do. But the last portion of my life, I'm going to do whatever it takes to make this world right. And even if it's a lost cause, according to the majority of the people who've been told that it's not possible. You know, Stephen Gibbons said something in the chat room up there earlier, and it's like way up there, so I don't know if I can even scroll up there, but essentially, you know, if you think you can, then you can. If you think you can't, you can't. Well, that's what they want. They want you to have that doubt whether you can or can't. And as long as that's their capability, then they have the mind control over you. They have the capability to manipulate your heart and your mind to further an agenda that only leads to greed, corruption, and death and destruction. And that's why I feel so strong about what it is that I'm doing here today. You know, and I'm honored and humbled that you two actually take the time to share your stories and information with people. And that I feel like we're on the same journey. I feel like that even the hardcore atheists of the world, they don't realize it, but we're all going to the same place. Even if it's just a dark grave, you know, we're all going there. Someday we're gonna meet our maker, or we're just going to fade into the darkness. But in the meantime, while we're living on this planet, what's the sense of making it miserable? You know, what's the sense in killing? What's the sense of destroying? You know, something that is so beautiful. However you think we got it, I feel like it's a blessing, a gift, what we've been given, this earth and these people and each other. You know, if you could only see through my eyes one time, I wish that you could just see what it is that I see, and you'd understand why I'm so passionate about what it is that I'm saying. I have this feeling in my heart that the best that I can explain is calling it love, because it, you know, love to me, it is the most powerful tool in my arsenal, you know, and I can choose to use it or I can choose to hoard it. But if I decide I'm going to pour every single ounce of that love out of my heart and give it away to everybody and his brother, for some reason or another, I can never empty that well. And I don't know why. That's one thing I have never ran out of. And it's the same doggone thing. If you decide you want to hold on to grudges and hate and all that kind of stuff, and you allow that to fill up your well, that's all you're going to give the world. Is hate and disrepair and dysfunction and misery. Why would you want your brothers and sisters to live in misery? Why would you want to put misery out in the world, knowing that misery that you sent out into the world is coming back to you? Some people call it karma, you know? So you could call it what you want. But there was a reason why the good book said, "Thou shalt not kill." You run around killing all your brothers and sisters, you're going to make somebody angry, and they're going to want to kill you back, you know? So, what you give in this world, you get back, and sometimes in overabundant amounts, because I feel like sometimes you need to learn a lesson, and so you do something terrible to somebody, and some really terrible things is on its way. You know, a lot of people in a lot of cultures believe that. And even in science, for every action is an equal and opposite reaction. I do somebody terribly wrong, somebody going to do me terribly wrong. But if you got love in your heart, if you're willing to accept some of that love in your heart, and some of the messengers, or, you know, whether you believe to be the Messiah, you know, whatever spiritual journey on, if you listen to the words that came out of their mouth from so many different cultures, that's what they were trying to say to you. That if you love people and if you do what you feel in your heart to be right at the right time when it's necessary, then this world is indeed a better place. Am I wrong?
Well, I don't think you're wrong. No, I'm just listening to you and I'm thinking, you know, I'm just one person here. I'm not controlling anybody. I'm not controlling any people. I'm just sharing here and just, you know, sharing what I feel is significant and important. And people have their own issues.
Yeah.
You know, people create their own stuff, you know, and then they don't take responsibility for it. Instead, they just keep pointing to the person that pushes their buttons or perhaps maybe has said something that is truthful about them.
Yeah.
Right? But, of course, that person becomes the enemy. I am not anybody's enemy. No one who's listening out there, or any of you people on Knights of the Round Table chat, I am no one's enemy. I'm really a good person. But I will call you out if you disrespect me.
Yeah.
Because I will not stand to be disrespected. I've been there in my life as a woman. Okay? As a person, as a human being. You know, don't play me. Don't disrespect me. Take responsibility for your own actions and your own behavior and stop pointing fingers, because this is what's going on and I don't particularly like it.
Yeah, ultimately we are responsible for every choice we've made from our entire life. We personally are responsible for our own actions. It don't matter what somebody has done to you in the past. It might have shaped you into being the person that you are today, but from that point on, what you do after that, you choose, you know? And even if you, like Rush, even if you choose not to make a choice, you still have made a choice. And so that's the power that is. That's basically, that's the game being played on us, or the game we're playing on somebody else. And I'm like you, Barbara, if somebody, you know, disrespects me, I can understand disagreeing with me, or, you know, even wanting to debate a situation. That's fine. It's okay to agree, but we here on the Knights of the Round Table, we agree to disagree in a respectful manner, and we treat each other accordingly, you know, in a good way.
Well, yeah, I mean, I want to say, if you're a man, act like a man.
Yep.
Be responsible for what you do, what you say. If there's something that comes, like if we disagree with something, okay, I have an open heart and I'm willing to sit and talk with someone to basically, you know, come to a better understanding or a better understanding. But if you're not willing to do that, we can't get very far. And if you keep playing games and keep being the victim and keep, you know, those things going, then I'm not going to engage. I'm just not.
Yeah.
Because that's just... Because it doesn't go anywhere, right?
Yeah, I get it.
You know, so it's like, after a time, you know, I'm pretty flexible, but after a time when someone is unwilling to take responsibility, I just can't go any further. That's just how it is. So I just, you know, I'm just emphasizing this because of the sad people are, you know.
Yep.
I'm just a participant here. Basically, this is your show, Shaziz. I'm very honored and grateful to be here, right? So this is how we communicate and share things that we feel are important, right?
I'm so glad that you are here. You know, while we're all on this journey out here to make sense of what's real and what isn't real, you know, what we're living in right now, I think we could all agree it needs some brushing up, and I think we can do it. I honestly believe we have the power to fix this stuff.
Yeah,
and together
I do.
Together, I believe we have the words of wisdom and the resources necessary to keep the ball rolling. I'd like to see sometime down in the future a youth version of the Knights of the Round Table where we can hear, you know, what they have to say, because you need to listen to them. They're growing up. They're witnessing the world as it is, and they're building their minds and perception. And, you know, if we can offer them advice, you know, not try to tell them where to go with their life, but show them from, you know, what we've witnessed through our life. These are the results of what we tried, and this is how it came out. Maybe you factor that into your decision or where you're going to go from that point. You see what I mean?
I do. I absolutely do. I think there's many situations that prove to be a sad state of affairs. you know, and I think the best way, you know, is to identify that, realize that, you know, like we share things that we feel are significant or important or our own personal experiences. I am not out to prove anything, right? And I don't make statements out of the top of my hat without, you know, the, I guess you'd say with the research or without really knowing the whole story.
Yep.
But this is what we're inundated with these days in our lives. People make remarks, people throw stuff out, negatives, really scary stuff, harmful things, and make statements that are, you know, really damaging and hurtful to people, possibly, right? They could really, I mean, people are very vulnerable.
Well,
people are really in a vulnerable position now.
That's another point.
As you and I, we, and Two Dog, and Patty, and anyone else who speaks to the people, it is our job, I believe, to be very careful about what we're sharing, what we're speaking about, the things that we do research about. You know, I mean, we work here on this show, I think, to really point out things, to share things, our experiences and miraculous things and so on, and then we give solutions.
Yep.
Solutions do exist. I believe that there are solutions until my day is done here.
I agree.
Until I'm gone physically, I will always turn toward the grand possibilities. That there are always possibilities. I am not God. I will never make a statement to any person listening that you are doomed, that you are done, that it is hopeless,
yep.
That you are helpless. Because that's hurtful. That's very harmful.
Well, it's mental
torture. And yes, it's mental torture, but you know, the other thing is there are always things written in the Bible, written in various other things and so on, but you have to, I think what's been going on in a lot of cases, like people are picky and choosy, picking certain things and choosing certain things to give out to the public. We've seen that. We've seen preachers, we've seen teachers, we've seen historians, we've seen politicians pick certain things to say, all right? But there's more, and they don't share that. There's always more. There's always something more, right? They are picking things to either scare the population or rule or own the population. And again, we're back to what is real,
yeah.
Right? We started out our show with what is real, you know? Even if you read something in a book, and let's say the Bible, any book, history books, if you read something in this book, you still have to find the truth. It may not be what you read in the book,
yep.
Right? I'm just saying.
Because, you know, man is flawed. And so if one book is questionable, then all books are questionable, just like all histories and stories. And so the best that we can do is basically sort through it and use discernment. Because, you know, in my book it said in the last days it'd be a great deception that even the elect would be deceived, you know. And we've seen deception. You know, maybe not on the scale that was prophesied yet, but maybe so. Maybe the fact that we're sitting here questioning, is everything in the world, everything in this world is real if you believe, or everything in this world is fake if you believe it to be fake. Maybe the fact that we're sitting around there questioning that could be the ultimate deception to steer us away from it. But the whole point of this conversation was to open your eyes to actually focus. You know, there's a military saying where it says attention to detail, because if you ain't paying attention to detail, that's when you slam your finger in the car door when you're trying to shut the car door, because you wasn't paying attention where your fingers were, and you smashed your fingers, and it hurt like heck. Well, same thing applies with life. When you're not paying attention to detail out there, you're going to miss out on things. If you're not paying attention when somebody's actually speaking to you, how can you have a conversation with them? I got so aggravated just yesterday because I'm talking to some friends. They ask me a question to tell them the story, and I tell them the story, and in the process of telling the story, they keep interrupting me, and I can't get back to the story, and so finally I'm about ready to give up not telling the story. But if you pay attention to what people's saying, you can understand what it is their point. You can hear their stories. For me personally, when I listen to you talk, Barbara, I'm watching it like a movie in my head. That's how my mind works these days. I have such a visual mind that, you know, if you tell me something or whatever, I'm seeing it in my head as you're explaining it to me. So I understand every word that comes out of your mouth. And the same goes with Two Dog. When Two Dog mentioned about his vision and about the flags and all that, I resonated with that because I seen the ultimate goal. I watched the entire movie play out before my eyes as he spoke those words, and that's how powerful words really are. Words have started wars. Words have taken people's lives to the top, and words have taken people's lives to the bottom. It's one word from the right individual in this world that already has power that brings somebody up to celebrity status. And all the different people out there talking to each other saying, yeah, such and such said this is an awesome singer, and so we're putting this person on stage. That's what's going on out here. The folks at the top... Yeah, go ahead, Two Dog.
I wanted to relate to you, my brother, that... thank you, Red, by the way. I just now received yesterday Catalonia and Basque in the mailbox yesterday, so we're up to 67.
Cool. 67 and climbing. Man, I tell you, I'm still working on that other collection. I just... You know, having a few issues of my own, but...
No, I just wanted to let you know that that has come up to at least 67 now.
Well, I'm excited and happy for you, brother. I am so happy about it. And I want to see the day when they're all standing there and your dream, your vision is fulfilled. I would love to see them surrounding the Tree of Peace. And I'd love to see a representative from every one of those places be there to witness that thing so that they could see what it is that we've been talking about all along.
I'm hoping that's going to come to pass.
Well, I honestly believe that that's the future. It's coming. And I think that what we're doing here today is basically moving that journey forward. You know? I don't think that this is for nothing, folks. I wouldn't invested all my time and effort into doing something such as the Knights of the Round Table if I didn't believe in the dream. If I thought and I listened and I believed that other people's words, that it was worthless or hopeless, that there ain't no way that we are ever getting nothing done, well, then I wouldn't. Why would I spend so much effort doing what it is that I do? I do believe in the dream. I honestly do. But I know the key to making that dream a reality is to send that message out to the rest of the world to do exactly what it is that they do every time there's a natural disaster or a tragedy. They come together. I stood before my family and I cried with everything I had, and I asked them, I said, why? Why does it take a tragedy? Why do we got to stand here at this funeral united when we should have been that way all along? Why do we got to wait for one of our loved ones to pass on before we can actually come together as a family? Nobody
has answered. It's actually gotten to the point, Shaziz, and a lot of times in this day and time, that family doesn't even see each other until a funeral.
Yeah, that's sad.
That's ridiculous, man.
You know, we got a global family, really do. There's actually people out there. These are all our brothers and sisters, regardless of what you think. You know? And it just, everything aside, all the differences, all the labels that you've been tagged with by, you know, so-called government representatives or even social justice engineers out there, you know, put all them labels aside. Everybody out there bleeds the same. We all cry the same. And, you know, we all live and die the same, you know. And maybe our paths are different, but the actual physical we're dying thing, or we're actually on our way out, it's the same. My grandfather said a long time ago, I don't know where he got the phrase from, but he said a long time ago, there are no atheists in the trenches. They're all saying, God, you get me out of here and I swear I'll change my life. You know, it's sad but true. We live in a world that could be so much better than what it is. We have amazing technology at our disposal. some of which is actually being used against us to spy on us and manipulate us into voting a certain way, or, you know, to steer a certain population into fighting each other, because as long as the chaos reigns supreme, they call it Novus Ordo Seclorum, I think. No, maybe that ain't it. It's order out of chaos, whatever it is. The other one was out of many one or something like that. I'm not good on Latin. But either way, you get the point that, you know, if you create enough chaos and you create enough hatred and racism and anger amongst the people, you can keep them fighting. And as long as they're fighting, the people that ain't in the middle of the fight are saying, we need to be protected because we're in danger. Well, there's a piece of paper called the Constitution that says we the people on the top of it, so we're supposed to be the ones who rule the government, not vice versa. But it gives us certain rights, but those rights weren't given to us by that piece of paper. They were given to us by our Creator. We have a right to move around this world freely, but we're hindered by rules and regulations and laws and everything put into place by the power structure that we put into place because we said we needed leadership, and then we allowed them to run amok. But in reality, if we was to take it literally, we, the people, are the government. And as long as we allow people to do to others under you know, our banners or our name or nations or you know, groups or whatever, as long as we allow people to do that, then they're going to continue to do that, because as long as the chaos reigns supreme, then we're always going to be, as the peaceful people, asking for protection from the people who actually started the mess to begin with. I think they call that like a false flag, reaction, solution, right? Is that how that works?
Yeah. The difference between, say, you and myself, okay? My life journey, I've been everywhere and had to do what I had to do in my young time. So, to be honest, I watch everything. I don't miss nothing. Even in my sleep, I sleep very lightly, you know? But that's what was... So everything is just, you know, if I go to battle over something, it's not to go to war with somebody, but it's to protect... is to protect, not just to go, you know?
Yeah, and I believe that's the true heart of a true warrior, you know?
It's to protect, not to just jump in the fight. It's to protect.
Yep. Well, folks, we're down near to that point again. Actually, over a little bit, but on the way out of here, I'm going to play a couple of little things of the dream, because I want everybody to hear what my vision of the dream is, and also want to replay the Bug's Life little deal from the Grasshoppers, because that's the key. These folks out there that are in charge, the puppet masters, the ones pulling the strings and manipulating the finance out there, they don't want you to know who you really are. Because if you ever find out who you really are and what you're capable of doing, and you take that power and unite it with your brothers and sisters around this world, you don't even have to be violent. You just raise your voice. See, in my book of faith, Jesus said if you had the faith of a mustard seed, you could move a mountain. You could speak to that mountain and that mountain would surely move. Now you can imagine if almost 9 billion people spoke up and said, no, we're not taking this from you anymore. We're not going to kill one another. We're not going to do all these terrible things. And when somebody's hungry, we're going to give them food. And if anybody's going to jail, it's going to be you for getting in the way. That's what you have capable of. And you're capable of so much more. I believe our Creator didn't make any trash, only treasure. Look at this earth. This wonderful, beautiful creation that is the earth. Everything that you ever needed is provided right there before your very eyes. It's right there. Right there. And everybody that you need to help you harvest the fruits of what this world has to offer, they're right there. And if you can lay down your egos and put aside your pride and decide that you do want to be a servant to your brothers and sisters and make this world a better place, to leave behind something so wonderfully profound, something that they would look back and there would be old folklore tales about, there was this time when things were just really terrible, and I heard they did horrible things to each other, but I can't see that now, because as wonderful as things are today, that's a possibility. And in this world, even if you don't know what the difference between real is and not real, that just makes it even more possible, that anything is possible. Everything is possible. So if everything in this world is real, if you believe, then maybe it's the truth. Maybe Bigfoot does exist. Maybe there are aliens. Maybe the Earth is flat. Maybe it's round. Maybe it's concave, convex, hollow. Maybe the moon is made out of cheese. Maybe everything is real. It could potentially be that nothing is real. And so that's the conundrum. That is the mystery of all mysteries. But this journey that we're on doesn't have to be a sad one. It could be an exciting journey as we together seek to find the truth, and we share it with one another in the most loving fashion possible. So with that said, it's time to go around the table. What about you, Barbara? You want to go first, ladies first thing?
Oh, thank you. I would just want to thank everyone. I always feel, really grateful to be able to be on the show with you guys. And I think it was a really good show. We went from one direction to the other, which is the way we go, right?
Yep, takes on a life.
And it takes on a life of its own. And I hope every one of you receives something that, touches you, or maybe we planted a seed. And, again, I want to say that, I don't claim to have all the answers. I only have my own personal experiences, so I share them. I'm not pushing my ideas on anybody, insisting or demanding or commanding. I think that's why we're here, is just to share our perspectives and what we have found out or come to understand. And we all have our own abilities. I just feel there's something far greater going on here that we are experiencing. It's not just this little dark closet or this little, this small piece. I think there's something far, far greater. And to me, that's exciting, and that's pretty awesome. It gives me a sense of, an adventure. Like, we're all on an adventure here together. We're not alone. Nobody out there is really alone. We're all in this together. We're all here on this Mother Earth. It's our home. We are all, I feel, have the gifts of creation, the gifts of free will, and it's just an awesome time that we are in. And I just want to thank everybody for listening and participating, and that's all I have to say. And I'll probably see you later. I don't know if we're going to have a people-to-people, if we're going to have a host's chat, a talk show. I don't know, but if we are, we'll be here.
Well, if
doing
I'm
the
available,
same thing.
I'll join you, because as much fun as we hate it when it's time to quit on the Knights of the Round Table, but gotta give people's mind a rest. Let them soak up the message.
That's right.
Because we have said a lot today, and it has been a wonderful show. I'm always amazed at how these shows take a life on of their own. And hopefully, folks, if you get the message that we're trying to share with you, that you'll share it with somebody else. So with that said, Two Dog, can you top that one?
Well, as far as topping anything, I don't try to top nothing anyway. The main point is love, honor, and respect to each other.
Amen, brother.
And we're getting away from that a lot in this modern time. The thing of the heart is it's a great thing what we do. And I love being on this show with both of you and Patty Walking Turtle and everybody else that comes on it. To be honest, what I'm actually wanting to say is that with what's going on with the vision that I've had, it seems to be that Grandfather's doing it so I'm not questioning. Just letting it go. And I hope for one day there will be a peace council. Maybe a yearly meeting, maybe something like that, where everybody around the world comes together, but just to take care of each other.
Well, and that's
really what I'm wanting to do with what I'm getting as far as these flights are concerned. And what I understood from this vision is the flags are becoming the arrows, and we put these flags in a bundle, and unity happens. You can't break this. So I'm hoping this thing comes, and I'm always honored to be with you, Shazir. Go.
Well, brother, it's a humbling experience. It's an honorable experience just to be able to share this time with everybody out there. I believe in possibilities, and I do believe in the dream. If my heart wasn't true, you know, this show has brought us to laughter, it's brought us to tears, it's brought us to frustration, but it's also brought us something more profound than that. It's brought us unity, like you speak about the arrows that, you know, one by itself is breakable, but the more arrows you put together, the stronger it becomes. And I feel like the Knights of the Round Table and all the guests and the people listening out there have become really strong. And this information and the love being shared out here, you know, it's where we want to go with the world. It's how we're going to make this world a better place. So with that said, folks, you've been listening to the Knights of the Round Table. If you like anything you heard on this, even if you only like just a little section of it, take it into your audio editor, cut out the section that you like, and share it with somebody. You know, that's how we get the message out to everybody that there is hope in this world. You know, the world's crazy. It's terrible, and some of the things is wonderful. You're at a buffet of every kind of experience that you can possibly imagine. And it's, you know, it's up to you to choose which part of that world you want as yours. It's up to you to decide that those that you think need to be, you know, polished up or fixed or made better or whatever, just simply shared, such as a smile. It's up to you. You, the person listening right there, you're that miracle you've been waiting for. Look in the mirror. You're a miracle of creation. There's something so amazing and so individual about yourself. You know? And imagine your beautiful piece of that puzzle next to the next beautiful piece of the puzzle and so on down the line. And all of that comes together to one big amazing picture of what the glory of our Creator, you know, had accomplished. The things that we could do with our free will and the gifts that's been given us are beyond all imagination as far as I'm concerned. And so with that said, share this on your social media network. Bring people to the table. Bring them to the chat room to say hi. Go over to People for People Radio and say hi to those folks over there. They're wonderful individuals. Share it with somebody. Bring a friend. Just say hi. That's all we're asking. So with that said, peace and love, everybody. I'm going to play us up out of here with The Dream and Bug's Life. And thank you, Two Dog.
And lots of love and blessings to all. Doksha.
Amen. Thank you, Baldwin. Thank you, Two Dog. Hey, I didn't hit the button and cut you off that time, Two Dog. You got it in. All right. All right, Stephen, thank you in the chat room, Anon, and everybody over there at People for People Radio and all the other affiliated networks. Thank you for everything it is that you do, because you are the ones that make this all possible.
What is the dream? The dream is to bring brilliant minds from every nation together to solve the world's problems, one positive pebble at a time. It will be we, the people of the world, that bring about true change, peace, and love to all. Governments never solve any problem, only create them. Wars, starvation, sickness, oppression, financial slavery, death and destruction is what governments do best. When all the military might of nations is used to destroy other nations, the question has to be asked, Why not use that military strength for good? Feed the hungry, shelter the homeless, heal the sick, and so forth. True representation of truth, freedom, and justice comes from we the people, and it never came from slick-talking politicians that say whatever they have to get elected, and then regulate away your freedoms. There is no reason to have starving babies in the world of today. Yet, it goes on. There's no reason for wars and sickness, yet it continues. We as the people must stop feeding that beast that is eating humanity alive. We the people of all nations have the power to bring about a literal heaven on earth. You as an individual have more power than you can possibly imagine. You have the power of the spoken word. You have the power of the pen. The power of action, and most of all, the power of love. It is time to use this power to make our world a better place. We are the founding fathers, mothers, sisters, and brothers of our children, and of our children's children's future. Into the future and beyond, what we do today will define the world that they live in tomorrow. Let us, from every nation, come together and make that future a great one.
It was that ant that stood up to me.
Yeah, but we can forget about him.
Yeah, it was just one ant.
Ooh,
one ant.
Yeah, you're right. It's just one ant.
Yeah, boss, they're puny.
Hmm, puny? Say, let's pretend this brain is a puny little ant.
Didn't that hurt?
Nope.
Well, how about this one?
Are you kidding?
Well, how about this?
You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up.
Those puny little ants outnumber us 100 to 1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life.
It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back.
Does anybody else want to stay?
Old woman!
Man!
Ma'am, sorry. What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37, I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you ma'am.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here! Oh! How'd you do?
How'd you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
Well, that's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people, I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king then?
The Lady of the Lake. Her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
Oh, but you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
Oh, but if I went round saying I was an emperor, Just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
We're knights of the round table. We dance whenever we're able. We do routine to call a scene to footwork impeccable. We dine well here in Camelot. We eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table. Our shows are more mid-table. So many times we give and rhyme to our quite something able. We're off the mad in Camelot, we sing from the die of Camelot. Oh, we're tough and able, quite indefatigable.
I have to push the Pramalot.
No, on second thoughts, let's not go to Camelot. It is a silly place.
Right.
Survive the terrible! Always looking to serve the terrible and the knights of the round table!